Englewood, Denver. Enid Goldstein is straight ahead. It's 12 o'clock.
Good afternoon. Partly cloudy, 25 degrees. I'm Tim McLaughlin. This report brought to you by Xantrex 3. The bitter cold walloping Metro Denver and the rest of Colorado won't last forever. In fact, forecaster Kyle Fredin of the National Weather Service says it should clear out pretty soon.
Today and tonight ought to be the last day of the Arctic air. Tomorrow into Thursday, we get into the normal range, actually a little bit above, with mid-40s to lower 50s. Normal for this year is about 43 degrees in Denver.
Fredin says there's no Arctic air appearing on his radar for at least the next 7 to 10 days. The cold temperatures got people turning up the heat, enough so that according to Steve Rolstad at XL Energy, it was a record-breaking night.
The record is now 1,945 decatherms of natural gas. The previous record was set on December 21st of 1998 when our customers used 1.7 million decatherms of natural gas.
Rolstad recommends that you still try to conserve, although he says the XL system is fully ready to meet customers' heating demands during the cold snap. Meanwhile, Sue Cobb with the Denver Department of Human Services says metro area demand for energy assistance through the statewide LEAP program was 12% over last year, and that number is as of the end of December. Doesn't factor in this latest cold snap. Attorneys for Kobe Bryant have asked a judge to close an upcoming hearing because what will be discussed at the hearing could taint the jury pool. A hearing slated for February 2nd and 3rd is expected to go over statements the L.A. Lakers star made to police last July 1st, just hours after a 19-year-old Colorado woman said the 25-year-old Bryant raped her. The defense doesn't want those statements allowed as evidence at the trial. Another pretrial hearing is scheduled for January 23rd. That's expected to be open to the public and the media as well. There have been two arrests in the investigation of Colorado's first murder of 2004. Denver police say Angelo Lovato and Gabriel Solano are being held for investigation of first-degree murder in the shooting death of a 20-year-old man early on New Year's Day at a party in the 1200 block of West 9th Avenue in Denver. Police aren't sure which of the suspects will be charged with actually firing those shots. About 25 scientists at NASA's Langley, who spent 3.5 years working on the Mars rover, are overjoyed by the vehicle's success. NASA engineer Jim Price calls it a dream come true.
Well, it's just mind-boggling, really, to be able to say 7 months ago you actually were touching something that is now on Mars.
Scientist Mike Saunders says it proves that the space agency has not lost its touch despite the recent Columbia space shuttle disaster. Saunders also calls it a real morale booster for NASA. The rover, named Spirit, beat the odds and survived a perilous descent to land safely on the red planet on Saturday night. Police in Britain are being asked to investigate the death of Princess Diana. The request came from Royal Coroner Michael Burgess, who is hoping to put to rest theories that it wasn't a, quote, relatively straightforward road traffic accident in Paris. The princess, her lover Dodi El-Fayed, and their chauffeur died in the August 1997 crash. New Jersey's two senators are reacting today to their former colleague Bill Bradley's endorsement of Democratic presidential candidate Howard Dean. Steve Sandberg reports.
New Jersey Senator Frank Lautenberg says Howard Dean is a strong presidential candidate, but stopped short at endorsing him like his former right-hand man, Bill Bradley.
I marvel at the fact that he can inspire young people who are so disillusioned by politics to come out and do things.
Senator John Corzine also likes Dean, but says it's too early for him to jump on the bandwagon.
I don't think the race is over.
Lautenberg is troubled by the heated rhetoric and debate and suggests those candidates without a prayer should drop out. Steve Sandberg in Newark.
A new poll suggests that job security is becoming a rare commodity in the U.S. Gantz Wiley Research reports that over the past year, the percent of employees rating job security as good has dropped from 63% to 59%. On Wall Street, stocks were mixed just before the top of the hour. Dow down 32 points, almost 33. NASDAQ up just over 5 points. The S&P 500 down just over 2. In sports, the Colorado Avalanche host the Columbus Blue Jackets tonight at the Pepsi Center. Avs beat the Blue Jackets when they last played in early December. Denver Nuggets slump continues with the Nuggets losing 98-74 to the San Antonio Spurs last night at the Pepsi Center. Nuggets guard Carmelo Anthony says they had a difficult time penetrating the tough Spurs interior defense.
Spurs is a great half-court defensive team, so it's really hard to, coach wanted us to try to go to the, try to take it to the glass, be aggressive. It's kind of hard to do that when, all five of the guys just standing in the hole. So, that's when we settled for jump shot.
The Nuggets will be in L.A. tomorrow night to play the Lakers. What's the number one diet pill in America? Xantrex 3. Rapid weight loss, incredible energy, and one amazing super pill. Xantrex 3. At stores nationwide or log on to Xantrex3.com. Traffic and your exclusive Weather Channel forecast are up next. KNRC News Time is 12:05.
Celebrate the new year with a gift for yourself and your family. Something that will give you safety, comfort, and beauty, all while bringing you savings. I'm talking about doors. The entrance to your house provides security to your family while being the first impression to your home. Don't compromise these while contributing to high utility costs with old doors that let cold air in and warm air out. Call Colorado Door Connection at 303-425-3366 for a free estimate today. From our family to yours, to help you ring in 2004, enjoy a free storm door on us up to a $1,200 value when you purchase any entry system with installation valued at $1,200 or more. Colorado Door Connection. Visit our showroom at 9710 West 50th Avenue, just off I-70 and Kipling, or call 303-425-3366. That's 425-3366 today. Wishing you a very happy, safe, and warm new year.
KNRC News Time is 12:06. Time to check the lunchtime traffic with Darren Copeland of the KNRC Traffic Center.
This traffic report is brought to you by the Denver Water Board. And a pretty ugly drive right now. Northbound I-25 at Colorado. Four cars involved in an accident causing delays back past Yale. Southbound I-25 at University also have a minor accident causing some delays as well. And we got an accident involving a semi westbound I-70 at Sheridan. Please do your part to help conserve our precious water supply. Visit denverwater.org to learn how. Collectively, we can make a big difference. I'm Darren Copeland with your KNRC traffic.
I'm Stephanie DeLuca with the KNRC forecast from the Weather Channel. A chilly one today, 26 degrees. That's way below our average of 43. We are going to see partly cloudy skies later on tonight. Partly cloudy skies stick around, down to 15 degrees. Much warmer tomorrow, clouds and sun and 47. 47 for a high Thursday, becoming mostly sunny. For the Weather Channel, I'm Stephanie DeLuca on AM 1150 KNRC.
It's partly cloudy, 25 degrees. KNRC News Time is 12:07. I'm Tim McLaughlin. Our next news at 12:35 or when it breaks on AM 1150 KNRC.
The Enid Goldstein Show on AM 1150 KNRC.
12:07, 7 minutes after 12 o'clock. Welcome to the Lucky Tuesday edition of Enid Live. I am yours until 3 o'clock. And we have a lot planned for you today. Elizabeth Buchan is going to be joining us. She's a best-selling author, Revenge of the Middle-Aged Woman. Her new book, The Good Wife Strikes Back. She lives in London. She'll be at Tattered Cover Cherry Creek tonight at 7:30, live with us in studio. Friday, we're going to be live from the Denver Press Club. The focus of the show is going to be the stock show that starts on, I think, pretty much the same day. And next week, Dr. Dina Dell, who is going to be live with us in studio, his new book, Life, Liberty, and the Pursuit of Healthiness. We have a lot that we're going to be talking about today, but we want to get started with Representative Andrew Romanoff to find out what's coming up in the next legislative season. Are you with us, Representative Romanoff?
I am, and thanks for having me. Call me Andrew if it saves you airtime there.
It does. It's a lot of alliteration and a big mouthful. You're the minority leader, which I don't know what that means exactly. You're not a woman. And you're not Asian, so I don't know.
I'm working on the minority part of the title. I'd like to be in the majority, and maybe if you have me on in a year from now, that could happen.
All right. I hope you're right about that. What's going to happen? What do you see coming up? I saw your piece in the paper on Sunday in the perspective section of the Post. It was lots of fun that the star of Terminator 12 stepped down as governor, as Gropernator of California.
I hope he doesn't read the Denver Post. But
I don't know if he does read, period. So I think you're safe there, Andrew.
I think the next session is a terrific opportunity for us. The priorities that we hope to pursue, at least on the Democratic side of the aisle, really start with the economy. Our state's fallen in the last couple of years from 49th to 49th in job growth. We were second just a couple of years ago in leading the nation, and we think we can do better.
It was reported, I think, in the Denver Post just the other day that there are record number of bankruptcies in the state of Colorado.
I think a real source of trouble to us. There's really two concerns here. One is, can enough Coloradans find work? And today, 140,000 people in our state can't. But the bigger ticket question, in our view, is are we doing the kinds of things in this state to make Colorado economically competitive over the long haul? Are we putting in place a top-notch system of public education? Are we putting in place a genuinely modern transportation system? Are we providing for the long-term needs of our citizens in terms of health care and water? Are we going to be at a place in 10 or 20 years where citizens will say, gosh, we're glad that some folks in the last decade actually took a long-term view? Or are we going to instead pursue a path that sends us to the bottom of the nation in some of these
measures? Right, what are the paths that are sending us to the bottom of the nation?
Well, right,
because
now,
in the Post, they rated the governor, and they were very high. I noticed that there were certain omissions. Now, here's a guy who's built his whole career on family values, and I didn't see any mention at all that he's involved in a trial separation with his wife, but it talks about what he has done to reduce taxes. Well, it seems to me that there's a correlation here between the reduction of taxes and the lack of monies for essential services. Can you address that?
Sure. Yeah, I think we can do most of the things that I just mentioned without raising taxes or raiding resources from the next generation. But it's pretty clear that Coloradans are going to have to make a tough choice. Do you want to have, for example, public colleges and universities in this state or not? The president of CU said she'll have to privatize her school by the end of the decade if we don't do something to change our priorities and probably to change our constitution itself. We're on track now to, I think, compete with Mississippi or Louisiana for the ranking.
The bottom of the barrel.
Yeah. We already rank 48th in high school completion, 49th in job growth, 50th in child immunizations. Well, we don't think that's good enough. We think Colorado can do better. We ought to be leading the nation, not lagging it.
Why do you think, if I were to ask you, why this national bubble that wants to put itself in a more conservative landscape, what would your reasoning be?
In terms of the national political?
Yeah, system? National and even local. I mean, Colorado, I'm from California, and Colorado, I think I always thought Denver was more moderate, but Colorado is really a more conservative place. And it really reflects what's going on nationally. There's some kind of, even though socially Americans tend to be more liberal, and you have to assume that because porn is or adult entertainment is one of the biggest businesses in the United States, bigger than probably all the other entertainment businesses combined. So clearly we're socially liberal, but there's something in the mentality now that wants conservatism, and so you see it reflected in states like Colorado,
yeah.
And you see it nationally in the political process.
I think there's a couple things going on. If you ask most Coloradans where they put themselves in the political spectrum, I think they'll say, well, and I just talked to a president of a major company this morning, actually, he said, you know, I'm a fiscal conservative, but I don't have any use for this kind of right-wing social political extreme agenda, so I call myself a social democrat, he said, and a fiscal conservative. And I think that's where most of the people in my district, and I bet most people in the state are, they believe that we ought to limit the growth of government. They would just as soon keep more of their money, but they're not interested in demonizing people who look different from them or denigrating each other's patriotism. And unfortunately, that's what a lot of this folks in this building spend a lot of time doing. I just don't think that advances a broader...
Yeah, but the fact that it sticks is really troubling. You can hurl all kinds of allegations, but the fact that people take it seriously,
yeah.
and you get Dixie-chicked if you even question it. I mean, Willie Nelson has got a new... He's going to come out with a new song with Whatever Happened to Peace on Earth. So he's going to take his lumps. I want to ask you about John Andrews. I know it's a little bit out of your bailiwick, but not completely out of your bailiwick. He's talking about... he's talking about trying to stem judicial activism. He's talking about term limits for judges. He's trying to root out, he's trying to take account and find out if there are any conservatives on college faculties. Don't we have more important issues addressed that Colorado is facing?
I sure think so. It's almost comical because what happened is Republicans lost a bunch of court cases that Supreme Court said you can't redraw congressional lines every time you feel like it. Can't violate local control over schools. They can't run roughshod over the procedures that make sure every piece of legislation in this building gets a hearing. You can't do all that. And if you do, you're breaking the Constitution. So I think what most sort of reasonable folks would have said was, gosh, maybe we should live within the limits of the Constitution that we've got. what the Senate president seems to be saying is, if you get decisions you don't like, you just throw out the people who are making them, and that's fine for the elective branches of government, the legislative and the executive. But there's a problem that you run into when you say the same thing to the judiciary. And I think Senator Andrews' argument would be better put to the framers of the Constitution, who set up a third branch for the very reason that he's now struggling with, which is sometimes what the other two branches do doesn't quite fit with our concept of democracy and individual rights. And I say it's almost comical. The almost part is because I think what he's doing is ought to be really troubling to folks of all political
situations. And particularly true conservatives, because
that's right.
Because it's a real incursion into the judicial process. And also, you're seeing that at a national level with John Ashcroft. You heard Chief Justice William Rehnquist lash out at Congress because federal judges are now being scrutinized if they engage in downward departures in sentencing.
So
they're going to be blacklisted, people who engage in it, and suddenly the checks and balances are mitigated.
Well, that's right. I think, checks and balances is not to be just a breakfast cereal. It's an actual constitutional principle.
Well, good luck to you in trying to sell it.
Well, and judicial activism seems to be a really flexible principle here. I mean, nobody wants to see a renegade system of judges that might get so brazen as to actually start picking presidents of the United States.
Oh, we wouldn't want to see that happen, would we?
That'd be frightening, too.
Andrew Romanoff, if you're just tuning in, Andrew Romanoff is our guest. He is the Democratic leader of the Colorado House of Representatives. We're talking about what we can look forward to in the legislative agenda. And let me just ask you this question. We had a caller calling in. I mean, the Democrats in this state appear to be among the nearly comatose sometimes. And we had a caller calling in saying she wanted to volunteer. Because we are hearing all about Howard Dean's meetups and Wesley Clark's meetups, and so she called the Democratic Party to find out how to volunteer, and she got nothing back from them except an envelope soliciting her for a contribution. When she did an experiment and tried to volunteer with the Republicans, they came back right at her within seconds, an email listing all kinds of activities and contacts. What can we do to change that situation?
That's very troubling to me. I think we should fix it. It's pretty clear we need to get our party better organized, and you're not going to, be able to beg people to volunteer if the ones who sign up don't get their calls returned. So I'm sorry about that if she's still listening.
Julie DeWitty called us, and I'm not exactly certain what her position is with the party, but they're saying that they're going to be trying to do certain activities and so on now.
We are, and for my part, what I'm trying to do as a leader of the Democratic Party is position us as the party of solutions. I think for a long time people looked at Democrats as the source of complaints. And maybe to some extent that's inevitable when you're in the minority, when you're in the position of opposing proposals that are coming out of the majority. That's all you hear from Democrats. We don't like this, we don't like that. I think over the last few months, I hope, and certainly over the next 12, that you'll see us coming up with solutions, trying to tackle the bread and butter concerns of our constituents. And to answer your caller's point, putting in place the sort of organizational and logistical tools to take.
People want to connect and people want to help out, and they don't know what to do. And if the party doesn't give them some sort of a guideline, you're wasting a resource. And finally, I want to just ask you about a book that's gotten a lot of attention lately. It's called The Rise of the Creative Class by Richard Florida.
Mm-hmm.
And there are various, I have a feeling you probably know about that book.
Uh-huh.
And what they're saying in that book is that if you, you can attract more, the kind of creative workers you need to attract the industries that value that kind of an employee by doing the things that you talked about, Andrew Romanoff, by having better schools, by having a vibrant, city life, an arts culture, a cultural, museums and so on, all kinds of things that attract that high caliber worker. But if you have no jobs for that worker,
right,
then that worker is going to go where there is a greater likelihood of jobs. So what is the solution now in a tough economy, even though it's turning around allegedly, it's still pretty much a jobless recovery?
I'm glad you asked that, because that's really our focus. We think we can make this the year of the great Colorado comeback. And if you talk to enough business leaders and economists, they'll tell you what companies and workers are looking for are the things that you mentioned: a skilled workforce, a high-quality transportation and education system, a high quality of life. We'll offer 100 specific proposals during this legislative session to make that happen. We're going to try to reduce the tax burden on small employers. We're going to try to help farmers earn more from their commodities. We're going to try to promote Colorado more aggressively to tourists and businesses. And this is the most important thing. We're going to try to make sure that Colorado still has something to promote. I just talked to the head of a major company in Colorado yesterday and asked him why he decided to move here. And he said, well, you guys had a great university right near us, CU. And when we asked high-tech workers whether they would like to live on the East Coast or the West Coast, they said, no, we'd rather live in Denver because of the things that you mentioned, Enid. And I think we're in danger of losing those assets. And I don't want to look back 20 years from now and say, gosh, how is it that Colorado no longer has any public schools or colleges or universities that are worth the time and money we're putting into them? And how is it that our roads are even more congested than they are now? And where did our water go? I think if we take a long-term view, we can get there from here. And as the last thing I'll say, I think most Coloradans agree with us. I know that the state is outnumbered Democrats to Republicans, but if you ask most folks in opinion surveys, do you want to do something to make healthcare more affordable, to preserve the quality of open space and parks and trails? Do you want to do something to improve the public school system? I think, and those are all the ingredients.
Yeah, but you're coming at it from a very logical, from a very logical perspective. And I think that choosing candidates is like falling in love. And you've got, what you've got on the national scene is you've got Gary Cooper on the one hand, which is George W. Bush, who I call Dick. I think it's a more apt description. So that we now have two Dicks running the White House. So we've got George W. Dickie Bush on the one hand, who plays the role of Gary Cooper. Yep, nope. Bring him on, dead or alive. You know, that's his role. And then you have Howard Dean on the other hand, who's playing the role of Harry Truman. So you've got Gary versus Harry going on, and it isn't about logic. It's about how people respond. So if the Democrats are, you know, nicey-nicey, and we're going to propose logical solutions to problems and address everything, they're never going to get anywhere. They have to assume a persona. They've got to be proactive. They've got in there and march. You know, the Republicans have most of the white educated males are, for some reason, heavily Republican. To the extent the Democrats wonder whether their franchise on women and minorities will offset to any appreciable extent the advantage of Republicans having more of the white males in their pocket. So I think you can't just be nicey-nicey and logical. You just got to step on the gas and march forward and be as testosterone-driven as our president, who, when he was offered the opportunity to fight on our behalf, he declined. And Dick Cheney, as you know, famously said he had more important things to do. So that's my advice. Free advice, Andrew Romanoff, worth what you pay for it.
Worth more than that.
Thank you. I'm glad that you could join us today. I'm delighted that you have. Any parting words for us?
I think Harry Truman wins.
You think so?
Well,
we'll see about that. Well, the buck stops here, we hope. Andrew Romanoff, who is minority leader, the Democratic leader of the House, Colorado House of Representatives, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you very much.
I'm Enid Goldstein. You're listening to AM 1150 KNRC as we continue some shocking news coming out of London. Princess Di, Charles, she comes back from the grave. Was she pregnant when she died or wasn't she? We talked a little bit about that yesterday, but shocking new allegations as we continue. I'm Enid Goldstein. You're listening to the Lucky Tuesday edition of Enid Live on AM 1150 KNRC.
Talk radio, both sides, AM 1150 KNRC.
Are you tired of the weight loss battle? Do you find yourself feeling desperate to lose weight and keep it off? Listen to what UltraCarb users are saying about their experiences.
I've been on UltraCarb for 2 weeks. I've lost a total of 10 pounds, and I cannot believe it.
In the first 9 days since using UltraCarb, I lost 10 pounds. It's the only thing that's worked for me, and I am so excited to get down to my goal weight. Right now, I'm losing 20 pounds a month, and within 6 weeks, I'll have reached my goal. UltraCarb is amazing, and I would recommend it to anyone who really wants to lose this weight.
Whoever said losing weight has to be difficult has not used UltraCarb. UltraCarb works by blocking carbohydrates, the source of most weight gain. If you want to lose up to 20 pounds and 2 to 3 dress or pant sizes per month, call now. UltraCarb is 100% guaranteed to work or receive a full refund. Call now to look and feel better about yourself.
Call 1-800-451-6432 and find out how you can get 1 month free with your order. That's 1-800-451-6432.
AM 1150 KNRC features more in-depth reporting than any other Denver talk station. Our in-depth reports have been recognized by the Colorado Broadcasters Association and the Associated Press for 4 awards of excellence. Hear in-depth reports from award-winning KNRC reporters Mark Roberts and Stacey Farb during the Greg Dobbs Morning Show or anytime at knrcradio.com, where you can click it and own it. Denver's in-depth talk station, AM 1150 KNRC.
Hi, this is Bill O'Reilly. Join me live every weekday morning from 10 till noon here on AM 1150 KNRC. Now back to Enid Goldstein.
1225 on the Lucky Tuesday edition of Enid Live. I have a couple questions to ask you. As I have said many times, across from our office, across from our studios here at AM 1150 KNRC, at night you will see homeless people sleeping on the grates. And because, you know, there's steam apparently pouring out of those grates, and so I'm assuming that there's enough warmth there to keep people alive. I have in the past, not this year, but last year, I've seen cops cruise by slowly trying to talk some of these people into maybe spending the night in the pokey, because I think nobody wants them to conk out there on the street. But last night, I was out there, and a couple of them have set up tents. They got a couple of shopping carts on one end and then on the other end, and they've got a kind of a blue tarp that, you know, covers the sides and the top, and I guess they're sleeping up bundled in sleeping bags. And some people were not under a tent. They were just on top of the grate, bundled up. I don't know how they could manage it. It was, God, I don't know what it was last night. It had to be zero or below, but it was pretty brutal out there. And I didn't know what to do. I was thinking about going over there and maybe putting some food out or some, I didn't know. I didn't do anything is the truth of it, but I thought about it. And I know that there are some city worker or some Salvation Army people who have gone past to be sure that people, you know, to ask them if they wanted some shelter for the night. A Salvation Army driver was on a mission, it was reported today, to rescue some of the homeless. And a lot of those people simply do not want to be inside. Some of them have mental problems. Others have substance abuse problems, and they just rather be out on the street. But it just breaks your heart. What do you do in a case like that? And then I thought about putting some money under the tent, and then I didn't know what to do. And it seemed like maybe I really didn't know. It seemed a little bit dangerous, but maybe it wasn't. Maybe I just had a rationalization for kind of walking past. What do you do in a case like that? 303-382-1150. As I said, in the past, I have seen squad cars, cruisers slow down past them and try to talk them, bring them in for the night. But when it's zero, gosh, I don't know how they survive even out on the grate. And then sometimes you see them in the morning when I'm coming down to the station in the morning. I see them and they look logy and, you know, trying to get their eyeballs juggled correctly in their sockets and so on. So, Diana from the grave, let me just share some background if you're new to the program or new to me. I have covered the royal family in England for a lot of years. I started out by going to the wedding of Charles and Diana in London. And when she died, I went back to London to cover the funeral for a number of media outlets. I did some work for, well, I'll tell you how it happened. And when she was getting married in London, I forget now how I wound up doing it, because I do some reporting once in a while. I don't really consider myself a reporter so much, but every once in a while I'll do a story. And I wanted to do that one. It intrigued me. And I wound up filing for the San Francisco Examiner when the Hearst owned it, and for KCBS in San Francisco, and I forget who all else. And then when she died, I was doing a talk show. And I had scheduled one of her biographers, Nicholas Davies, whom, if you have listened to the show, we have had him on. And he is the one that says he believes that the evidence indicates that intelligence services, most likely British intelligence, killed Diana. And it's just being reported now that she was pregnant at the time of her death, that this was an arranged killing, that too many of the facts simply don't add up, and that there was some car in advance of her limousine driver that shined this powerful laser light on his eyes, disorienting him, and he crashed, and they were all killed. There was no inquest so far in England, 6 years after the fact, no inquest at all. Now they're talking about starting an inquest. But as Dominic Dunn reports, Diana was pretty prescient about how she was going to die. She pretty much nailed it 10 months before she died. Word had come to her that she was on pretty much on an intelligence hit list. And Nicholas Davies told us on this program that the senior royal involved, and they're always, he says, is the senior royal liaison to the intelligence services is Prince Philip. Well, now there is an inquiry that's going to be opened because it was revealed in one of the English newspapers, The Mirror, that Prince Charles is a person Princess Diana claimed in a letter wanted to kill her. And the libel laws in England are so tough that for them to say this means either they're completely crazy or they have very good information. 303-382-1150. I'll tell you the story of how I came to cover the funeral of Diana, Princess of Wales. I was doing a show out of San Francisco, and I was just out and about somewhere. I don't remember where. And when I got home, I checked my messages, and three or four people had called me to tell me that Diana had died. And I was just flabbergasted. Who expects somebody that age to die? It's not even on your radar. So I immediately went to town and booked Nicholas Davies to be our guest the next day and talked about it on the air. And I wound up doing a piece for the San Francisco Examiner, when Hearst owned it. And Channel 2 saw it, KTVU-TV in the Bay Area, who I had done commentary for. I had been a regular commentator for KTVU-TV in the Bay Area. And so they asked me to come on their one of their morning shows and talk about having covered the royal family and, you know, what I knew. The show airs from 7 o'clock in the morning to 9 o'clock in the morning. And if you know anything about doing television, they lard you on with so much makeup that, in my case, I had enough makeup on to topple the Empire State Building. And I went on the air. I did the show. It was on a Wednesday, I think. And then it was done. And by 9 o'clock in the morning, my life felt like it was effectively over. I didn't have anything to do that day. And I hatched a plan. I thought, well, why don't I go to London? Why don't I see if I can go to London to cover the funeral? This is Wednesday, the funeral schedule for Saturday. I'm in San Francisco. So the first thing I do is I call my travel agent to see if this is even remotely doable. And she says it is, and so she books something. And then I find out, to my dismay, because I wasn't thinking straight, or maybe I was thinking straight and hoped to ignore it, there wasn't a hotel room to be had in all of London. I mean, there was no way I was going to be able to book anything in London. Forget it. Well, I knew that there were people over there. I don't know, friends of friends found somebody who they were friends of theirs who worked at the BBC, but she was in Wimbledon, and I wouldn't, you know, and that wasn't going to work. And, anyway, I went. And in the meantime, I wound up filing for KABC in Los Angeles. I filed a little bit for KTVU TV in the Bay Area, for the San Francisco Examiner also, WABC in New York, and KFBK and KSTE in Sacramento. So I was, and I got on the plane. I get there. I hadn't slept in like 48 hours. My eyeballs were rolling around their sockets once I hit the ground. By the end of this time, I really didn't even know who I was feeding anymore, what reports I was giving to whom. I mean, my brains, what laughingly referred to themselves as my brains, were pretty much hashed. But in that first night that I got there, I wound up being in a satellite bureau for ABC, which was really just a hotel room down the pike a little bit from the ABC Real Bureau. And in that satellite bureau where there were just three of us. It was Michael Jackson, the legendary Michael Jackson, not the singer, from Los Angeles. There was a reporter, Pat Boyle from Portland, who was feeding a lot of the Clear Channel stations, and what became Clear Channel. And then there was me. And as everybody was leaving for the night, I just was going to, Pat said to me, well, where are you going to stay? And I said, well, I think I'm just going to sleep on the floor here. They'd taken all the beds out of the room. It really was a functioning bureau. I said, I'm just going to crash on the floor. She said, you know what? I have an extra space in my hotel room. You can crash with me if you want. Well, it turned out that her general manager's mother-in-law was able to secure the hotel room booking for her because the general manager's mother-in-law was a frequent visitor to London. And let me tell you, this was like a five-star hotel. This is not the kind of hotel you expect a journalist to be residing in. And I got the benefit of that for a couple of days. I was really thrilled. It was very deluxe accommodations over near St. James's Palace. In any event, watching the sadness, watching this outpouring of affection for Diana was incredible. Whatever you saw on television, whatever masses of flowers you saw at the various palaces that people left and makeshift memorials, was nothing compared to seeing the real thing. It was mind-boggling. And it gave you an indication of how beloved she was and therefore how threatening she would be to the royal family. So can you imagine? Here's a loose cannon of a princess running around, getting herself pregnant, as it turns out, if the tabs are right, by somebody who is a Muslim, and she's not married, and she is the mother to the future King of England. They had to get rid of her. I think I agree with Nicholas Davies. I think that this was probably an intelligence-driven hit. They could not. She was way too popular. She was a people's princess, and there was a moment in time where the royal family was so reviled at this time that if Queen Elizabeth had not come back from one of her palaces, I forgot now which one, and pretty much gone live on television to say how important Diana was and to really beg forgiveness of her constituents, of her subjects, it could have been, in terms of public relations, the tide could have turned very much against the royals, because that's what was going on, that they refused to come back in time. They didn't fly the flag at half-staff like they were supposed. You know, there were all these things that only the flag flies only when the queen is in residence. And, there were all these things that people were looking at, these small indicators that are very big in English life about whether or not the royal family was showing the proper respect for Diana. And in every measure, they fell short. So if Queen Elizabeth had not given that live, and I think it was the first time ever in many decades that she had appeared live on television to talk to her subjects about Diana's death, if that didn't go well, the tide would have been against the royal family. So it was an extremely interesting time. What's also very interesting, who knows if this letter is right, that Diana saying that Prince Charles was a person who wanted to kill her. But even if it isn't, from the grave she's controlling the dialogue. And when she was married to Charles, think about this. Camilla was the third party in that relationship. And now that Diana is dead, Diana is the third party, the ghost, in the relationship between Charles and Camilla. You have any thoughts about this? I think it's a very intriguing soap opera. And here she is. It proves that even if you're dead, you can still be powerful. 303-382-1150. I'm Enid Goldstein. You're listening to the Lucky Tuesday edition of Enid Live on AM 1150 KNRC. 12:37, time to check into the KNRC newsroom for an update from Tim McLaughlin. Hi, Tim.
Hi, Enid. Good afternoon. Partly cloudy, 26 degrees. I'm Tim McLaughlin. This report brought to you by Waterway Gas and Wash. Police are investigating a fatal accident involving a school bus this morning in Boulder County. The 17-year-old driver of a car was killed when his car was struck by the bus. Only the driver was aboard the bus. The driver was unhurt in that accident. It was a record-setting night last night for natural gas usage, according to XL Energy. The utility says, though they are fully prepared to meet customers' demands during the current cold snap, National Weather Service says the current Arctic air blast should be clearing out by tomorrow. Kobe Bryant's attorneys want his upcoming hearing in February closed to the public and the media because they say what will be discussed could taint the jury pool. The hearing scheduled for the 2nd and 3rd of February is expected to cover statements Bryant made to police in the hours just after the 19-year-old Colorado woman accused him of rape. In sports, the Colorado Avalanche host the Columbus Blue Jackets tonight at the Pepsi Center. Avs beat Columbus when the two teams last met on December 6th. Waterway, the best car wash in town, has a winter protection package for you that helps protect your car from the worst of winter snow, salt, slush, and grime. Visit them today. Traffic and your exclusive Weather Channel forecast are up next. KNRC News Time is 12:39.
Winter is just around the corner, and sometimes it's difficult to make ends meet. If either you or your aging relatives are having trouble, you may be able to help them find benefits. AARP and the National Council on the Aging are helping people complete a benefits checkup to find programs that save money on groceries, medical care, energy bills, and more. Call 303-318-6764 to learn more. 303-318-6764. AARP, the power to make it better.
KNRC News Time is 12:39. Time to check with Darren Copeland in the KNRC Traffic Center.
This traffic report brought to you by AutoZone. Still working that six-car accident northbound I-25 at Colorado. We're trying to take the cars off at Colorado right at Mexico, where they've shut down a couple lanes to get ready for the demolition of the Colorado overpass over I-25. So hopefully in the next couple minutes that'll be out of there, but you're still going to see major delays back into the tech center. Time for an oil change. Buy 6 quarts of Valvoline Max Life Motor Oil at AutoZone and get a bottle of Max Life Fuel System Cleaner for free after mail-in rebate. See store for details. Get in the zone. AutoZone, I'm Darren Copeland with your KNRC traffic.
I'm Stephanie DeLuca with the KNRC forecast from the Weather Channel. Partly cloudy, cooling off quite a bit. High of 26 later on tonight, down to 15 degrees. Now for tomorrow, clouds and sun, much warmer. High of 47, and for Thursday, becoming mostly sunny, back up to 47. For the Weather Channel, I'm Stephanie DeLuca on AM 1150 KNRC.
It's partly cloudy, 26 degrees. KNRC News Time is 12:40. I'm Tim McLaughlin. Our next news at 1 o'clock or when it breaks on AM 1150 KNRC.
Computers talk in a strange language to us. Then again, so do computer techies. It's hard to find someone who will understand your computer needs. That's why when you're looking for solutions to your computer problems, you're looking for DataTarget.com. At DataTarget.com, you'll find people who target your computer needs in plain English. They'll cater to your problems relating to Microsoft Windows, installation upgrades, email, networking, internet, security. Whether it's a business need or personal, you'll find DataTarget.com makes the problem easy to solve. DataTarget.com will be there at your business or home to help rid the frustration of trying to resolve it by yourself or spending hours on the phone with a tech guy who can't even talk. DataTarget.com is affordable, and best of all, your first consultation is absolutely free. DataTarget.com. Call 877-856-1206. That's 877-856-1206. Or log on to www.datatarget.com.
KNRC Market Watch.
Stocks are mostly lower, weighed down by profit-taking and weak economic data. The upcoming earnings season may also be a factor, according to S&P Chief Investment Strategist Sam Stovall.
Investors are going to be looking not only at economic reports, they're also now going to start to be discussing year-end 2003 earnings results and also estimates for full year 2004.
The Dow Jones Industrial Average is down 28. Big board volume heavy, just over a billion shares. Advancing stocks leading declines by a narrow margin. The S&P 500 down 1, the NASDAQ Composite down 5. The service economy grew at a healthy rate in December, but at a slightly weaker pace than in November. The Institute for Supply Management's non-manufacturing index fell to 58.6. Any reading above 50 indicates growth. After posting 2 months of solid increases, the government says factory orders fell by 1.4% in November. It's the biggest decline in 7 months. I'm Larry Kofsky at themarketwatch.com, Wall Street Bureau.
Our contact number, 303-382-1150. We hear you. 303-382-1150. Close as your phone. 303-382-1150. KNRC.
1243 on the Lucky Tuesday edition of Enid Live. Just to let you know, if you're just tuned in, you missed Andrew Romanoff, who's the Democratic Minority Leader of the House of Representatives, Colorado House of Representatives. We will be joined later in the broadcast by Elizabeth Buchan. She wrote a really fantastic book called Revenge of the Middle-Aged Woman. And he's got a new book called The Good Wife Strikes Back. She'll be with us in studio. She's going to be at Tatter Cover Cherry Creek tonight at 7:30. She'll be here from London. So maybe she knows something about the royal family. Thursday, we're going to be talking about cowboy hats. I'm telling you, I have a fixation with cowboy hats. And if you look at clothes, clothes indicate all kinds of information
Don't laugh at me. Clothes are big transmitters of information. They will tell you your taste level if you look at how somebody's dressed. They reveal socioeconomic status. A man's suit is a walking mine of information. Is it hand-tailored? Is it off the rack? Does it look cheap? Does it look nice? Is there hand stitching? Do the buttonholes really work on the cuffs? I mean, there's a whole universe of information you can get just off of a man's suit. But a cowboy hat is a huge indicator, and since I don't know the language that cowboy hats speak, I was really interested to have Rich Rand on because he is written the cowboy hat book. And I got a cowboy hat, but I think I got the wrong kind. So I think probably if you look at my cowboy hat, it probably says wannabe on it in big neon letters. Anyway, he's going to be with us on Thursday. And the reason I bring it all up is on Friday, we're going to be live from the Denver Press Club, and we're going to be celebrating the stock show. What's it called? The National General, the Western... Oh, it's National General Western show. And so I hope we have Lainey Garrett. We're going to try to get Lainey Garrett on, and we are going to have a whole roster of people because the stock show opens. The media party is January the 9th, so I think it opens the 9th or the 10th. So that's what's going on. 303-382-1150. Okay, back to Princess Diana. First of all, I just get an email from one of you, from Richard, says, if there's a link and a conspiracy to the royal family, you will never hear the truth. The British aristocracy is too much honor to lose if they are connected to Di's death. For many British citizens, the royal family is above reproach. For the family to do wrong is tantamount to the idea that God is evil. Well, here's what Princess Diana believed. She believed that she was going to, she says, my husband, and this is months before she died, so... Dominic Dunn tells a story in this month's Vanity Fair. Dominic Dunn chronicled the O.J. Simpson trial, used to be a Hollywood producer, had his own drug problems, but has emerged as a kind of social chronicler of our time. And he met Diana in London somewhere along the line while he was covering the O.J. Simpson trial. His own daughter had been murdered. His own daughter was an actress, Dominique Dunn, had been murdered at the hands of her either live-in or was her husband at that time. I forget whether their relation was formalized or not. Their relationship was formalized now. But in any event, he's covering the O.J. Simpson trial, and Princess Diana says to him, he's going to be acquitted. And this is when Dominic Dunn was certain, covering it day to day, that that was absolutely not going to be the case, that O.J. was guilty beyond a reasonable doubt, and that he'd be hauled off to the pokey once the trial concluded. Diana said, oh, no. You mark my words. He's going to be acquitted. Dominic Dunn writes about that this month, as I said, in Vanity Fair, showing you how intuitive or psychic, whatever you want to call it, Diana was. And here she's writing. Before she died in a car crash, she wrote, quote, my husband is planning, quote, an accident in my car, brake failure, and serious head injury to make the path clear for him to marry. She gave the note to her butler, Paul Burrell, who revealed its existence last year, and they ran the story, but they blanked out Charles's name. Burrell has been asked to hand the document to the coroner, who today opens the inquest into Diana's death. So you've got to ask yourself, how come it took him 6.5 years to open an inquest? And it's being reported that she was pregnant at the time she died. So if that's true, and she's pregnant by Dodi Fayed, here he is, he's a Muslim, his father's very rich, and owns Harrods department store, as you know, and England is so snobby and aristocratic that for all of these years they have denied him citizenship, British citizenship. And he has hired investigators. He has really stepped on the gas here. But Britain's formal inquest starts here nearly 6.5 years after the pair died in a Paris car crash against the backdrop of intense media interest. The coroner formally opened the inquest into the death of Diana. He also opened a separate inquest into the death of the princess's companion, Dodi Al-Fayed, the son of the flamboyant owner of Harrods department store in London. Both died, along with the French chauffeur, Henri Paul, in the car crash in a Paris underpass, August the 31st, 1997. Under British law, inquests must be held whenever the bodies of British citizens who have died abroad are returned home for burial. The 6.5 year delay. So here's a law that says if you are a British citizen and you die, overseas, there has to be an investigation. They didn't do it for perhaps at the time, the most prominent British citizen of all. So it's a 6.5-year delay. You've got to ask yourself, how come they didn't want to do an inquest? What was that all about? What's up with that? The 6.5-year delay in holding the inquest is partly due to the lengthy investigation by the French authorities and the litigation that followed the crash. The coroner will be focusing on the causes and circumstances surrounding the deaths. It is this latter point that is of particular interest in Britain. Polls show that many Britons believe the princess was a victim of a conspiracy, perhaps within the royal family itself. The coroner, too, noted that there is a great deal of public speculation that the deaths of Princess Diana and her friend were not caused by a simple accident. He has appointed a London Metropolitan Police Chief to investigate whether to look into the conspiracy theories as part of the inquest. Let me tell you something. If the intelligence services did this, do you think that they can ever admit this? Do you think that any Metropolitan Police detective or chief, even if he knew it to be true, could ever publicly admit it? What would happen to him? Don't you think there'd be a conspiracy to get rid of him if he were going to go public with this information? That would, I, you know, maybe I've been reading too many spy novels, but what do you think about it? 303-382-1150. And the former butler, Paul Burrell, reacted angrily to the Daily Mirror's decision to name the senior member of the royal family who the Princess of Wales believed was planning to kill her in a car crash. Now, remember, he was on trial for stealing some of her things. And suddenly, in the last minute, Queen Elizabeth steps in and suddenly her memory hurls itself into focus and she gets him off the hook. What was that all about? So maybe there was a deal to don't say anything about Charles, I'll get you off the hook on this charge. So he is said to be furious that the Mirror published Charles's name. A statement released through his agent, Paul Burrell said, as the editor of the Daily Mirror will confirm, Mr. Burrell never wanted any new information to be published following the serialization of his book. Today's publication was solely a decision taken by the newspaper without Mr. Burrell's knowledge or consent. All right, so he doesn't want to be seen as benefiting from this, and maybe he made some kind of a surreptitious deal with the royal family to get him off the hook on his previous charge. He was only informed late on Monday evening he does not support or endorse its publication. Yet, he is the one who originally shared that information with the Daily Mirror, and since the libel laws in London are so tough, in England are so tough, maybe he expected that nothing like this would ever be published. Sam, on a cell, how you're live with Enid. Hi, Sam.
How are you?
Good.
Happy New Year.
Thank you.
Listen, I listened to, unfortunately, one of those Walmart across the thing, hall from you, whatever, across the street radio station.
Mm-hmm.
And they have a late show program. It's called Coast to Coast with Art Bell.
Mm-hmm.
And Barbara Simpson, his co-host, who sometimes takes over, had this one guy who basically knows people in the MI6. That's the British FBI and the MI6.
Well, MI6 is British intelligence.
The CIA version and the MI5 is the FBI. I'm sorry. Yeah, and he said to Barbara Simpson that, yes, he's got some people saying that this thing was planned. And the unfortunate thing is Prince Charles told Diana that this was going to happen. They held the ambulances and things like that for an hour in the tunnel, make sure she died. Then they allowed the paramedics.
Yeah, it took the ambulances a really long time to get her to the hospital.
Exactly. And the father of the driver told some newspaper or something that his son never smoked or drank in his life. And, you know, they said that he was drunk and all of that. They got rid of her basically because you just said it very well. They did not want a Muslim Arab guy to be thrown to that kind of property.
Single woman, a single princess that held all that popularity that could be very dangerous against the royal family, to be pregnant by someone who's a Muslim and not be married to him. And the mother of the future king of England, it was too much. They had to get rid of her somehow.
Exactly. MI5 and MI6 planned this, and they did it. And you said, what would happen if somebody and this author did go into that? And he said they would get rid of them, too. And
if the Metropolitan Police Chief, who is charged with doing part of this investigation, ever says that MI6 had a role, I don't think he's going to be long for this world either. And, Sam, say hello to Barbara Simpson the next time you call into that show.
Hey,
she's an old friend of mine.
Hey, that's fantastic. I'll tell her that. But listen, one more thing. I want to say, you know, as an American who's living here now, I just want to tell a lot of Americans that the CIA has done many things that have been covered up in this country, and people need to wake up and smell the coffee.
All right, Sam, I thank you for the call. 303-382-1150. I'm Enid Goldstein. You're listening to the Lucky Tuesday edition of Enid Live on AM 1150 KNRC.
Get your side, get their side. Hear both sides talk on AM 1150 KNRC. The Goodyear Stockroom Clearance Tire Sale is going on right now. Our stockroom just can't hold any more tires, so we're clearing out a wide selection of popular Goodyear passenger, performance, and light truck tires. Plus, when you buy four selected Goodyear tires, you'll get up to a $50 cash card. But hurry, the Goodyear Stockroom Clearance Tire Sale and $50 cash card offer both end January 17th. Don't let these great deals pass you by. For complete details, call 1-800-GOODYEAR or visit any participating Goodyear retailer. The KNRC Community Commitment.
Looking for love in all the wrong places? Try the Max Fund Animal Adoption Center, located at 1025 Galapago Street. The Max Fund is the only no-kill shelter in the Denver area for injured animals with no known owners. They have numerous loving cats and dogs available for adoption, and also offer low-cost spays and neuters. To find a friend or volunteer your time, call 303-595-4917 or go to www.maxfund.org.
Time for an oil change? Buy 6 quarts of Valvoline Max Life Motor Oil at AutoZone and get a bottle of Max Life Fuel System Cleaner for free after mail-in rebate. See store for details. Get in the zone. AutoZone.
Hi, I'm Enid Goldstein. AM 1150 KNRC proudly sponsors Mutts and Models, a celebrity fashion show and dance on Friday, January 16 at 7 p.m. at the Gothic Theater. This fashion extravaganza benefits Harrison Memorial Animal Hospital, Colorado's only nonprofit vet hospital, providing services at reduced prices for pets whose owners are low income. That's Mutts and Models, Friday, January 16 at the Gothic Theater. Purchase tickets online at blacktie-colorado.com or call 303-722-2100.
Hi, I'm Doug Kelly. Join me weekday afternoons from 3 to 6 here on AM 1150 KNRC. Now back to Enid Goldstein.
12:56 on the Lucky Tuesday edition of Enid Live. We're speculating about Princess Di. Amazing that from the grave she is able to still be such a powerful force. And why, if the law is that any British citizen who dies abroad, there has to be an inquest, there has to be an investigation when the body is returned. That didn't happen with one of perhaps the most prominent Briton to ever die abroad, or at least in recent times. 303-382-1150. It's kind of a juicy story. I have some information about Rush that I think is awfully interesting. One of you emailed me a link. Suddenly, Rush Limbaugh is concerned about conspiracies. He suddenly realizes the consequences of living in a society where government agencies have unfettered access to personal information. For years, Limbaugh has impugned, denigrated, and chastised any caller who dared bring up the subject of federal encroachment on individual liberties, calling them conspiracy nuts. Or worse, he has had little patience for anyone who wanted to suggest that both political parties are trampling the U.S. Constitution and helping to create a gargantuan federal oligarchy at the expense of the Bill of Rights and personal freedoms. Suddenly, however, he is screaming that he is the victim of a conspiracy. The issue is a criminal investigation into whether Limbaugh, who has been addicted to painkillers for years, violated the law by doctor shopping. To obtain the needed evidence, authorities seized, by court order, Limbaugh's medical records. He's furious. He maintains his medical records should remain private, and he's being singled out because he's a popular conservative. His inconsistency is massive, is being written here. For years, his beloved Republican Party has collaborated with liberal Democrats to eviscerate the Bill of Rights, and he has fully supported them. Patriots Act 1 and 2, the SS-style Department of Homeland Security, and dozens of other measures have come into reality with Rush Limbaugh's complete and enthusiastic support. As a result of his endorsement, personal freedoms affirmed under the Bill of Rights have pretty much taken a hike. Virtually any American citizens, not just those targeted by a left-wing conspiracy, is capable of being victimized by this new federal monstrosity. So here he is screaming that he is a victim of a conspiracy, trying to nail him because he's an important conservative voice. In fact, he's been a phony. He's been a liar. Somebody just sent me this email. He's blamed his problems on the equivalent of a vast left-wing conspiracy, is what he's saying now. It doesn't change the fact that he secured something like 30,000 pain pills before he was caught, or that until he was caught he enthusiastically supported our country's ill-conceived war on drugs, showed no sympathy for fellow nonviolent drug abusers who in many cases would benefit more from treatment than from incarceration. As for draft dodging, his unauthorized biographer, this is an email from one of you, Paul Colfer, dug up the craven means by which Rush avoided the draft. He evidently exploited a minor physical ailment. It was like a boil on his behind, literally, prevailing on his personal physician to intercede with his local draft board to secure his exempt draft status. Yet despite his lack of military service, Limbaugh was for months introduced as America's most patriotic talk show host. Well, maybe they should call him America's most patriotic junkie. What do you think about that? And when someone lies to you so egregiously, can you ever trust them again? I know, if those of you who are his core followers and ditto heads, if you're in love with him, then he can do no wrong. You will make a million excuses. It's like being in love with somebody who cheats on you and goes through your credit cards and bankrupts you, and you're still going to love him. You'll find all these ways to rationalize it. I think that's what it is. 303-382-1150. Don't you go anywhere. Two more hours of Enid Live coming up right here on AM 1150 KNRC.
Both sides talk. AM 1150, KNRC, Englewood, Denver. Enid Goldstein continues straight ahead. It's 1 o'clock.
Good afternoon. Partly cloudy, 26 degrees. I'm Tim McLaughlin. This report brought to you by Xantrex 3.
We did establish a new consumption record for natural gas yesterday.
No surprise there because of the cold temperatures. That was Steve Rolstad from XL Energy, who says the utility is prepared to meet the heating demands brought on by this cold snap.
We constantly make improvements to our natural gas system, adding compressor stations and pumps to ship the gas to our customers in order to meet demand. In fact, I spoke to our delivery people this morning, and they said, you bet, the system is holding up very well right now.
Meanwhile, Sue Cobb with Denver Department of Human Services says energy assistance applications have already exceeded the figures from last year at this time, figures that don't include this latest cold snap.
We are 12.5% over last year in terms of the applications that we've received. And that was as of the end of December.
The cold snap is due to a blast of Arctic air that blew in from Canada. National Weather Service meteorologist Kyle Ferdin says it'll be a while before we get a visit from an Arctic air blast again.
We're going to cool off again probably into the weekend with just a better chance for clouds and some snow showers, but no Arctic air really for the next 7 to 10 days as a ridge builds over us again. It's going to get cold in the eastern United States.
The record low for this date is the same as yesterday, 21 below, also set in 1913. Blame the blowtorch. That's what fire crews in Summit County are doing after extinguishing a fire at a condominium complex just south of Breckenridge this morning. The blaze at the Baldy Mountain townhomes was limited to one unit whose owner was not home at the time. According to investigators, a plumber was thawing out pipes with a blowtorch and the fire accidentally ignited. He suffered minor burns and smoke inhalation. The Colorado State Patrol is investigating an early morning accident that has killed one driver. The incident involved a car and a school bus at about 7 o'clock this morning. The driver of the passenger car, 17-year-old Jonathan Randolph, was killed at the crash site at 95th Street between Majestic Drive and Niwot Road in eastern Boulder County near the Hillcrest Heights subdivision. According to the CSP, Randolph, a student at Niwot High School, was making a left turn and was struck by the bus. Only the driver was aboard the bus. The driver of the bus was not hurt. At least two people are reportedly injured following an explosion at a chemical plant in Conway, Arkansas. The explosion caused a fire at the Detco Industries plant, sending huge plumes of black smoke into the air, which could be seen for miles. A number of nearby businesses and an elementary school have been evacuated. The war on terror is not over, and it won't be for some time. That's the word from Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld today at a Pentagon press briefing.
Terrorist networks worldwide have been damaged. Our 90-nation coalition in the global war on terror continues to track and hunt down and defeat terrorists before they strike.
Rumsfeld went on to say progress is being made in Iraq, and he hopes a, quote, interim but sovereign government will be in place in that country by next summer. The first photos being sent back from the Mars rover called Spirit aren't answering or solving any mysteries, but rather causing scientists at the Jet Propulsion Lab to ask many new questions. The new high-resolution images are just the first snapshots from the site where the rover touched down. NASA's Steve Squires is intrigued by a type of soil identified near the landing site.
There's something very, very
very strange, but this stuff is very cohesive. It breaks away in pieces, and it's not like anything that I have ever seen before. It's very weird looking stuff.
Spirit is still only functioning as a lander and won't move from its base for several more days. It is expected to operate for up to 3 months, driving across the Martian surface looking for evidence that water once existed on the red planet. On Wall Street, stocks continue mixed at this hour. The Dow is down just over 9 points, the NASDAQ up nearly 9 points, and the S&P 500 down just about a point and a half. In sports, the Columbus Blue Jackets come to town tonight to take on the Colorado Avalanche at the Pepsi Center. When the Avs and Blue Jackets last played in December, Avs came away with a win. The Denver Nuggets continue to have a hard time winning at home. Last night, the San Antonio Spurs came to town and beat the Nuggets 98-74. Nuggets guard Andre Miller says they were outworked by the Spurs.
Teams were just coming in, out-hustling. I mean, I think they got 3 or 4 offensive rebounds off a free throw, so that tells you about our rebounding. Effort wasn't there again tonight.
The Nuggets head to L.A. tomorrow to face the Lakers. What's the number one diet pill in America? Xantrex 3. Rapid weight loss, incredible energy, and one amazing super pill, Xantrex 3. At stores nationwide or log on to Xantrex3.com. Traffic and your exclusive Weather Channel forecast are up next. KNRC News Time is 105.
Shopping for a mortgage should be no different from shopping for any big ticket item. A car, a refrigerator, a house. You're looking for the best possible value available. Investment Property Funding Incorporated offers just that. The best mortgage rates available, starting at 1.25% for primary residences and just 1.65% for investment properties, with no points, no junk fees, and no surprises at closing. Increase your cash flow by hundreds, if not thousands of dollars per month. Investment Property Funding can handle all your mortgage needs with your choice of fixed rate, adjustable rate, or interest-only programs. They have a full menu of options for savvy, no-nonsense borrowers like you. Don't wait. Get the rates you deserve today by calling the professionals at Investment Property Funding Incorporated at 303-531-8508. That's 303-531-8508. Your mortgage experts, 303-531-8508, or online at ipfunding.com.
KNRC News Time is 106. Time to go to Darren Copeland now in the KNRC Traffic Center.
This traffic report brought to you by Waterway Gas and Wash. And good news, northbound I-25 of Colorado, they were able to get all those cars off the roads over to Colorado and Mexico where they have a lane closed down. So good news, things should be breaking free rather quickly northbound I-25 where we had those delays. Everything else looking quite nice around the metro area. Waterway, the best car wash in town, has a winter protection package for you that helps protect your car from the worst of winter snow, salt, slush, and grime. Visit them today. I'm Darren Copeland with your KNRC traffic.
I'm Valerie Seagraves with the KNRC forecast from the Weather Channel. It is not as sharply cold today as it was yesterday, even though our temperatures are still well below seasonal norms. With mostly sunny skies, we'll top out around 24 for the high today, 12 for the overnight low tonight, and then it's going to be much warmer tomorrow with a high of 47, upper 40s on Thursday. For the Weather Channel, I'm Valerie Seagraves on AM 1150 KNRC.
It's partly cloudy, 26 degrees. KNRC News Time is 107. I'm Tim McLaughlin. Our next news at 1:35 or when it breaks on AM 1150 KNRC.
And now the Enid Goldstein Show continues on AM 1150 KNRC.
107, 7 minutes after 1 o'clock. Welcome to the Lucky Tuesday edition of Enid Live. I'm yours until 3 o'clock. Couple of things. First of all, Elizabeth Buchan is going to be joining us, B-U-C-H-A-N. And if you were a fan of her, she's English. Her best-selling book was called, and it got great reviews, and actually it was a lot of fun to read. I read it, called Revenge of the Middle-Aged Woman. She got a new book out, novel, Good Wife Strikes Back. And I think Revenge of the Middle-Aged Woman sounds like it could have been written by Diana in a few years. But we'll talk to her. She's here from London. She's going to be appearing tonight at Tatter Cover Cherry Creek at 7:30. She has lots of fans. Again, Thursday, Rich Rand, the cowboy hat. We're going to find out all about cowboy hats. Don't laugh. This is important. You don't want to look like a wannabe. And I think that the cowboy hat I bought, which I bought at the last stock show, and I got the name right. Here it is. I'll memorize it. National Western Stock Show Rodeo and Horse Show. It starts the 10th of January, goes till the 25th, and there'll be an opening night event on January the 9th. And we're going to be doing the show, my show, live from the Denver Press Club. We do it once a month, and there's always a theme. The theme this Friday, to coincide with the opening of the National Western Stock Show as rodeo and all that, celebrating the stock show. So that's this Friday, live from the Denver Press Club. You're always invited to stop by and get a drink and join us and just watch. You don't have to be a member to come on down. So that's what we're going to be doing next week. Dr. Dean Adel, those of you who are fans of his, he's on television, he's on the radio, he has written books, he's got a new one out called Life, Liberty, and the Pursuit of Healthiness. He's an old friend of mine from San Francisco, and he is going to be live in studio, so we'll be talking with him next week. So that's what's coming up. A couple of things. First of all, yesterday we did a story. This is going to be a running story because there are going to be examples all over the place. Yesterday we did a story where researchers, all right, first story we did months ago. The Y chromosome for men, it's getting so damaged and it doesn't rejuvenate itself that they think that men are going to become obsolete in, I don't know, maybe 125,000 years or something. It's not tomorrow, even though many women believe that men have already become obsolete, but not for 125,000 more years. Well, then they did research that appeared yesterday that I shared with you. In the last 10 years, men have lost 30% of their sperm. We don't know where it went. But they've lost, their sperm count is down by 30%. And I was thinking yesterday, gee, is this because they wear so much fragrance? Queer eye for the straight guy. They're all wearing more jewelry than women. They're wearing cosmetics now. Okay, here's the best. What are ball players doing? For women, armpit hair has always been a big time don't unless you live in Europe. And now, here are ball players, basketball players, guys like Latrell Sprewell, and people like that, and they all shave under their arms. Is this for aerodynamic reasons? Does this make you faster on the basketball court, or is this a whole cosmetic thing? You tell me. Men are shaving under their arms now. I don't know. This may have a correlation with that 30% reduction in sperm count. Could be tied to those hair follicles. And also, if you saw the grading Governor Owen story in the Denver Post, nowhere they talked about the governor's political prospects. Given that he's term limited, that George Will, the conservative commentator, has deemed him presidential material and so on. But nowhere did they mention that he's separated from his wife, which I found very curious. And what impact that will have on any future political aspirations that he might have. So we don't know. The rumors are flying thick and fast about the governor. None of them may be true. Some of them may be true. Who knows what they are? One newsroom likes to refer to him as gender confused, so who knows what his preferences are. Maybe it's just a simple marital problem between him and his wife and nobody else is involved. But curiously, no announcement to that effect was ever made when the separation was announced. Allegedly, Owen's office gave a heads up to the two major publishers of the Rocky and the Denver Post, our two major newspapers in the state, letting him know that a separation was imminent. And indicating that nobody else was involved, at least that's the version I got. But when the announcement was made to the public, they never said nobody else is involved, which I think is curious, because if it's just between the two of them, I think that would have been a better announcement to make. I don't think it would have. You could argue that it opens the door to speculation if you say nobody's involved. But any time a couple breaks up, there's the first thing everybody asks is, was there somebody else involved? Is there anybody else involved? And this is a guy, Mr. Family Values. So why that didn't appear in this piece on grading the governor, the fact that he and his wife are separated, unless I didn't read it carefully enough, I don't recall seeing it. You can comment 303-382-1150. I think it's kind of clubby. I think everybody's protecting everybody else around here. And if you're covering the governor and you ask him some tough, very uncomfortable questions, maybe you'll get shut out and you won't get your story next time. Maybe that's why people don't do it. I don't know. 303-382-1150. We, however, here are pretty much fearless and dopey as a result, so who knows? But we aren't afraid to ask the hard questions, and we're not afraid to speculate, and we're not afraid to hold people accountable here. On Enid Live, 303-382-1150, and you can always listen to us on the net. We stream live, www.knrcradio, one word, knrcradio.com. So just note that. You can email me as well, enid@knrcradio.com. Paul Krugman, one of my faves. In today's column, he's talking about Argentina. And I have friends who just got back from Argentina. And they said, you've got to go to Argentina. Why? You can live in the grandest, most elegant flat. Think Paris. Think those elegant, incredible, palatial flats. for, you want to know how much? They're in such bad economic shape. $350 a month. You could hardly get a garage here for $350 a month. And in Argentina, you can live in the grandest, most elegant flat, one of them in Buenos Aires, where they have more psychoanalysts, I think, per capita than any place else. So it's a sophisticated place. Argentina, this is Paul Krugman, writing in today's New York Times. Argentina retained the confidence of international investors almost to the end of the 1990s. Analysts shrugged off its large budget and trade deficits. Business-friendly free market policies would, they insisted, allow the country to grow out of all that. But when the confidence collapsed, that optimism proved foolish. Argentina, once a showpiece for the New World Order, quickly became a byword for economic catastrophe. That's why it only cost $350 a month to get the grandest flat in Argentina. So what? Those of us who have suggested that the irresponsibility of recent American policy may produce a similar disaster have been dismissed as shrill, even hysterical. Hey, the market's up, isn't it? But few would describe Robert Rubin, the legendary former Treasury Secretary, as hysterical. His ability to stay calm in the face of crises and reassure the markets was his greatest asset. And Mr. Rubin has formally joined the coalition of the shrill. In a paper presented over the weekend at a meeting of the American Economic Association, Robert Rubin and his co-authors argue along lines that will be familiar to regular readers of this column, says Paul Krugman. The United States, they point out, is currently running very large budget and trade deficits. Official projections that this deficit will decline over time are not based on credible assumptions. Realistic projections show a huge buildup of debt over the next decade, which will accelerate once baby boomers retire in large numbers. All this is conventional stuff, if anathema to administration apologists who insist, in flat defiance of the facts, that they have a, quote, a plan to cut the deficit in half. What's new is what Mr. Rubin says about the consequences. Rather than focusing on the gradual harm, now remember, under Robert Rubin's aegis, we had some of the greatest budget surpluses in history. Here is the potential, Robert Rubin is saying, for catastrophe. Substantial ongoing deficits, he warns, may severely and adversely affect expectations and confidence, which in turn can generate a self-reinforcing negative cycle among the underlying fiscal deficit, financial markets, and the real economy. The potential costs and fallout from such fiscal and financial disarray provide perhaps the strongest motivation for avoiding substantial ongoing budget deficits. And lest readers think that it's only this guy who, Robert Rubin, lest readers think that the most celebrated Treasury Secretary since Alexander Hamilton has slipped his lid, the paper that Rubin presented rather mischievously quotes at length from an earlier paper by Lawrence Bell and N. Gregory Mankiw, who make a similar point. Mankiw is now the chairman of the President, George W. Bush's Council of Economic Advisers, a job that requires him to support his boss's policy. But he wrote a paper in 1995 basically saying that these kinds of massive deficits would be a catastrophe. So he's agreeing with Robert Rubin, but now he's in the administration, so he's got to support his boss. 303-382-1150. James in Lakewood. Hi, you're live with Enid.
Hey, how about this Christmas card with a made to look like a CD jacket, and it's got Rush Limbaugh's picture on the front, and it says the 12 Steps of Christmas. Okay, and the holiday, and features Limbaugh singing his holiday favorites, including Deck the Halls with OxyContin,
uh-huh.
I'll Be Out by Christmas, I love that one, Angels We Have Heard While High.
Where'd you get that, James? That's good.
That's on page 4A of the Rocky Mountain News today on the sidebar.
I didn't see that.
The holiday spirit.
Very good. Thank you. You get a gold star for that one. Thanks very much. 303-382-1150. I want to share with you a website that somebody just sent me, one of you. It's called Conservatives Against Bush. It was founded, and here they have a website, which is called conservativesagainstbush.com, appropriately enough. And it says about us, it says, Conservatives Against Bush was founded to propound the conservative principles that this administration has forsaken. This president has expanded the welfare state, saddled future generations with debt, eroded some of our basic freedoms, and waged a spurious war in Iraq that in the end did not make the U.S. any safer. We seek to re-energize conservatives so they will press for change in this administration. But we don't want to change a change in this administration. We want to change administrations is what we would like to do. 303-382-1150. I'm not surprised, because certainly you have to assume that real conservatives, not just the nasty, the people who are mean-spirited and nasty, who form, I think, the core of ditto heads call themselves conservatives, but I think they're the fake conservatives. The real ones would be very concerned about the erosion of the Bill of Rights, the erosion of our civil liberties. 303-382-1150. 303-382-1150. We have critics. Here, you have that MoveOn.org commercial that we talked about yesterday where they were equating Hitler and George W. Bush. MoveOn.org wants to stress that it did not create that commercial. They're having a competition for people to vote on the net to decide which commercial MoveOn.org should sponsor and which one should run. So that should be clarified. And in today, they are starting to do jury selection for the Martha Stewart trial. I think that's going to be pretty interesting. I'm not a great fan of hers, but gee, Ken Lay is running around free, isn't he? And a lot of people lost their life savings with him. A lot of people lost their retirement. A lot of people lost their future with him. He was one of the huge contributors, perhaps the biggest one early on, to George W. Bush. Roger, calling from Monument. Hi, you're live with Enid.
Hi, Enid.
Hi, Roger. I'm going to spell my name. It's Enid, E-N-I-D.
What a refreshing show.
Thank you.
It's probably the second time I've heard you, and it's very refreshing. Anyway, I heard a radio program probably about 2 weeks ago, and Bob Barr, the Republican congressman, I believe, from Georgia.
Yeah, the one who was against abortion, but he once paid for one when he was trying to dump one of his multiple wives and had a girlfriend in the wings.
Right, and he was very much involved in trying to impeach Clinton, as I recall.
Yeah, they spent $200 million on Clinton's penis and only maybe about $5 million to investigate 9/11. But I digress.
Well, anyway, he was on the other night, and he is very concerned about Bush, and he connects Bush with the Illuminati. And I don't know if you know anything about the Illuminati. If you don't, I would recommend you go to your computer and hit Illuminati and search.
I think I've heard. Isn't it kind of a conspiracy?
Yes, it's an international conspiracy of banking and corporate multinationals that are trying to take over the planet.
There is a new book out by Kevin Phillips. And we are trying to get him on. We have had him on in the past. He is a very well respected, formerly a Republican strategist. And he has written very cogently about all kinds of political issues. And he has a new book out on the Bush dynasty. And there are many of you who have talked to me about Senior Bush, Prescott Bush's involvement with Harriman. Brown Brothers Harriman on Wall Street and their Nazi connection in World War II. And
right.
He apparently, Kevin Phillips documents that.
And Skull and Bones is connected with the Illuminati, which is the secret society that the Bushes belong to at Yale.
Right.
Anyway.
Well, I don't know if I don't know to what extent I think that there's an organized Illuminati kind of a conspiracy, but certainly all these big banking interests, all these large corporate entities find each other one way or another, and when they're not busy competing with each other, they're busy scratching each other's backs.
Exactly.
At the expense of the rest of us.
Exactly.
Are you a Republican?
I am an independent, actually.
Okay. I wondered if you were perhaps a recovering Republican.
No.
Okay.
But I was shocked to hear Bob Barr, who is on the far right, actually... He's frightened to death that the Bushes are trying to take over the country.
Well, I'm frightened to death that they're so incompetent that they're making the worst kinds of decisions. They are lining the pockets of their cronies and themselves, perhaps at the expense of the country. And I think we're making a huge wrong turn. And it isn't just the kind of, okay, we can correct this in 4 years with somebody else. I think this is way down the line. I think we are on a slippery decline here if we have any more of them.
I agree.
Thank you.
It's frightening, really, if you think about, on so many different levels, I don't know if the country can recover from Bush, frankly.
Well, that's...
It'll take decades.
I think that's the real question. And just in a few years, we had these huge budget surpluses. We had, you know, the big tech bubble, and it all just went to hell in 5 minutes. Roger, thank you so much for calling. 303-382-1150. I'm Enid Goldstein. You're listening to the Lucky Tuesday edition of Enid Live on AM 1150 KNRC.
Don't settle for half the talk.
Hear both sides talk on AM 1150 KNIC.
What's all the buzz in the suburbs? Find out by subscribing to Buzz in the Burbs magazine. If you're looking for all the best places to eat, shop, travel, and have fun with the family, you'll find it in Buzz in the Burbs, the original lifestyle magazine for Denver suburbs. Buzz in the Burbs is a terrific resource with a wealth of information on fashion, food, home, travel, health, education, local events, personalities, and more. Best of all, you can get the buzz delivered right to your door. If you're not on the mailing list, call Buzz in the Burbs at 303-689-7665 or visit www.buzzintheburbs.com now to subscribe. For just over $1 a month, you get all the buzz about your suburban community right in your mailbox every month. 40,000 active, affluent families rely on Buzz in the Burbs for great ideas on family living. For advertising information or to subscribe, call 303-689-7665 or check out the buzz on the web at www.buzzintheburbs.com. Call 303-689-7665 today.
Talk to Greg Dobbs.
Okay, here's real justice. Unmitigated, genuine, obvious, don't argue with me justice. This guy in Tucson yesterday goes up to a Salvation Army setup, and the woman who is volunteering is in a wheelchair herself. She has cerebral palsy. She's 60 years old. This guy comes up, grabs the pot. She struggles with him. He runs with the pot, crosses the street, gets hit by a car.
There is justice out there.
Boy, yes.
Greg Dobbs, weekday mornings from 6 to 10 on AM 1150 KNIC.
And I'm Bill Thorpe.
Join us weeknights from 6 to 9 here on AM 1150 KNRC.
Now back to Enid Goldstein.
125 on a lucky Tuesday edition of Enid Live. It is crisply sunny out there. Cold but not unbearable. Even when it was hovering at zero yesterday, I don't really know how low it got overnight. It didn't seem as bad as, well, maybe it did to you. And it certainly would if you're living out on the streets. But it didn't seem that bad to me. And here I am, a California girl. Sort of, kind of, sort of. 303-321-1150, Van, calling on a cell. Hi, you're live with Enid.
Hey, Enid, how you doing?
Doing well.
Yeah, I just, I actually took the time to go check out those 30-second spots and, you know, liked some of them, didn't like some of them.
These are the MoveOn.org spots that everybody's talking about, especially the Hitler one?
Well, the Hitler one didn't even make the finals.
Okay.
You know, that was one thing that, you know, I figured out straight off is that, you know, they had, you know, they had, I guess, all their members. You had to sign up to be a member to actually vote.
Mm-hmm.
And the Move On membership, I guess those guys were like one of the bottom two or three vote getters. So it's like the membership of Move On.
Did you actually see that vote or that spot? Did they have it still up on the website?
No, the spot's long gone. The only spots that's still up are the finalists.
Okay.
So, yeah, I actually signed up so I could vote, but I went through, I think there was like maybe 15 spots out of the finalist spot.
Mm-hmm.
And I took the time, I got a broadband at home and I looked at them and the thing that I came away from, especially after I found out that, you know, there weren't just 15 spots, people submitted over 100 spots. And then looking at the quality of the spots that were up as the finalists,
mm-hmm.
It just made me incredibly optimistic about America and what's going to happen into the future. Because if you've got that many creative people generating that quality of spot that are that on point, there's no way.
Maybe it's going to be a generational thing, but I really hope that the Democrats and anybody who is opposing Bush can get it together and register a lot of new voters. Bush has got, here's where it shapes down, it shapes up as a struggle between Gary Cooper on the one hand and Harry Truman on the other. Howard Dean, so you got Gary versus Harry, or Harry versus Gary.
You know what? I think everybody ought to go rent the Capra Classic, Mr. Smith Goes to Washington. You know?
Yeah, but life is not like that.
Yeah, but we all watch A Wonderful Life every Christmas. Life isn't like that either. You know what? Watch Mr. Smith Goes to Washington. Make you feel a little bit better about, you know, hey, if that crap was the general consensus of what was going on in D.C., and, you know, you put Jimmy Stewart up there, you know, why not? Let's believe in some heroes.
It would be nice to believe in heroes, but they don't just happen like a Hollywood movie and somebody casts somebody who looks like Jimmy Stewart to save us, to ride up, gallop up on a horse with a white hat. You have to really be vigilant. What is that line, the famous line, the price of democracy is eternal vigilance, something like that. You do have to be vigilant, and we have become very passive. Remember now, the business of America is business. What we were told to do after 9/11, the most massive intelligence failure, the only time we've really ever been hit on these shores, was to go shopping. So if we are not citizens anymore, we are a nation of consumers. We don't even live in cities. We live in what are called markets. So in order to be a nation of consumers, you have to be manipulated by the advertisers and by the people who want to sell you things, and you become passive. In fact, the whole structure of selling television time, even radio time, is to deliver you in one body from one commercial to the next, and the programming is just to connect the dots between commercials. We sort of view it differently here at this radio station, but we are unusual in that respect. But that is how the time is sold.
Yeah, I agree with you, Enid. It's just, you know what? Have you sat and actually watched a bunch of the spots?
No, I haven't seen them, but I'll try to do that, Van, and I thank you for the call. 303-382-1150. Don calling from Denver. Hi, you're live with Enid. Don. Not there? Okay, I think he's gone. All right. What we're talking about here is a passive. We have become so passive because we're used to being passive. We're used to demanding our rights and not exercising our responsibilities. And if you look down, you know, I can check off a million things that we ought to be doing if you're going to be a responsible adult. Remember your mom always told you, if you want it done right, do it yourself? Got that part? Okay. Well, you don't just let somebody think that somebody else is going to clean up the mess. I mean, I see it all over the place. If you want it done right, you're going to have to do it yourself. You can't just lay back on the couch with the remote in your hand and channel surf and expect that the universe is going to do what you think it should be doing. You have to get out there and help to make it happen. You certainly don't expect that that's going to happen at work, do you? You kind of have to get out there and make it happen. You think a job is going to come knocking on your door? No, you got to kind of pound the pavement, right? So what we have become is passive as consumers, because we're not even citizens anymore. We're consumers more than we are citizens. We hardly vote, right? And we're busy screaming about what we're entitled to without ever stepping up to the plate to take on our responsibilities. So you have a disaffected bunch of people who think they can't control their destinies and yet who feel that they're completely in charge of their destinies. It's a very odd confluence of detail here. An odd confluence of perspective. 303-382-1150, but I think if you really want to save this country and if you love this country, you don't just support your troops by passively wearing a pin or a bumper sticker. You get off your behind and you do something. At least vote. Read a newspaper. See what's going on. Get involved. Do some volunteer work. Organize. Find out what your gift is with people. Get involved in a voter drive. Organize, register kids who've never voted before, or college students or something. It will be very interesting. It's actually very interesting to do it, and you meet a lot of people that way. So if you're single, or even if you're not single and you're looking to make new friends, it's a great way to do it. Don in Denver, hi, you're live with Enid.
How you doing, Enid?
Doing well.
Happy New Year.
Thank you, and to you?
Mine has been going pretty fine.
I think, you know what, I'm going to go on record here. I'm going to go on record as saying, besides more in four, I'm going to say that 2004, I think, is going to be a good year and a lucky year. And I hope I'm right about that.
I don't know about being good and lucky, but I think a change is going to happen in 2004, and I think it's going to be a change that a lot of people aren't anticipating. And I just leave that at that. But this whole election and the whole election drive and Democrat, Republican, liberal, conservative, this is a joke, man, because one of your callers before talked about the Illuminati. The Illuminati, it's a real thing. It's not a conspiracy theory. These people meet at the Bilderberg meetings every year. They meet in the Council on Foreign Relations, Trilateral Commission, and several other organization think tanks around this country and around the world that really control and map out plans, not for 10 years or 20 years down the line, but they have millennium plans and every 100-year plan. They're making plans for the future generations of people that haven't even been born yet. And
I don't know, Don. I got, you know what, I've heard some of this talk before, and to me it sounds like a lot of conspiracy theory.
Okay, well,
if you've got stuff, send it on to me. I'll take a look at it.
Well, the only thing you have to do is punch in Illuminati on your computer, or punch in Bilderberg Group, or punch in Council on Foreign Relations, punch in Trilateral Commission, and you'll get all of this information. But what's going on here is, whether you're in the Democratic Party or the Republican Party, these people control both of those parties. So it's like a good cop, bad cop scenario, whereas, you know, all of us are fighting whether who's conservative.
Well, Gore Vidal, who is an interesting novelist and screenwriter and who is related to Senator Gore and uh-huh. vaguely related to Al Gore, he has long said that anybody who's the president represents the bank. He calls them, quote, the bank.
Yes,
and the bank are the people who really control things, and anybody who's the president is just doing the bidding of the bank. Well, when you've got a smart president, at least a smart president might challenge, quote, the bank. But when you got a weak president like George W. Bush, who for some reason, as a weak man, he projects a strong yes ma'am, no ma'am, bring him on kind of a machismo.
But see, that's the thing about liberals that I can't stand. You know, you criticize George Bush, you criticize, you know, this gross misuse of capitalism, and you want stuff for the poor, but you're not really willing to change the system. And changing the system means not getting rid of these international banksters and gangsters. That, I mean, 6,000 kids around.
Oh, but Don, you can't, what do you, wave a magic wand and you make all the banks disappear? Come on, give me a break. 303-382-1150. Joe in Denver. Hi, you're live with Enid.
Hi, Enid.
Hi, Joe.
I was listening to your show the other day, and you had mentioned commercials, the 30-minute commercials on MoveOn.org.
Well, I don't know if they're 30 minutes. I think
no,
they're short.
30 seconds. I'm 30, sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah, 30-second commercials. And I went on online the other day, and there are some powerful 30-second commercials. And I think the one that was most powerful was the one that was using children. And it was done by a gentleman in Denver. I can't recall his name. I think it was Fisher or something like that. But
Charles Fisher, Joe tells me, was he the one who called us? Somebody in Denver did call us about his own commercial.
His last name was Fisher, and I think it was the most powerful one out of the 15 that were up there. It was using children. It was children working. One kid was picking garbage, on a back of a garbage truck, and one kid was washing dishes. Another kid was sweeping floors and mopping floors, and it says, who's going to pay for the $1 trillion deficit? And then it says, Bush's $1 trillion deficit in the future.
Well, you know what would have been even more powerful, maybe?
A look at that commercial.
If you see little kids tucked into bed at night in their cribs, who's going to pay for that $1 trillion deficit? You see them in a little bunny costume, too.
And there was another one where they showed Bush talking in a background, and they were flashing all these pictures of the soldiers that died in Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
And the final comment was, Bush lied, they died. So there are some really.
Will those powerful spots be enough?
Well, I don't know.
The core Bush supporters are like the core Rush supporters. You're not going to get them off the dime.
There was another thing I read on MoveOn.org, and it was I guess they mentioned something about Liz Trott on one of Bill Riley's shows, and she had mentioned that the backers of MoveOn.org were members of the World Socialist Movement or something like that. Nobody challenged her on that.
Well,
so it's like people on Fox.
Their former MoveOn.org, MoveOn.org, I think, was organized by people who made a lot of money in the tech bubble. That's what
No, but I mean, she's making these comments on Fox, and nobody challenges her on it. You know, she makes these comments that the backers of MoveOn.org are like from the World Socialist Movement, and O'Reilly doesn't challenge her on her, and nobody challenges her on
her. Okay, Joe, we're going to leave it there. Thanks for the report. 303-382-1150. I'm Enid Goldstein. You're listening to the Lucky Tuesday edition of Enid Live on AM 1150 KNRC. 1:37, time to check into the KNRC newsroom for an update from Tim McLaughlin. Hi, Tim.
Hi, Enid. Good afternoon. Partly cloudy, 30 degrees. I'm Tim McLaughlin. This report brought to you by Xantrex 3. The cold weather last night brought with it a record-setting level of natural gas usage, according to Xcel Energy. The utility says it's fully prepared to meet customer demands during the current cold snap, which should start to let up by tomorrow. The Colorado State Patrol is investigating an accident this morning in Boulder County between a car and a school bus. The 17-year-old driver of the car was killed as he was making a left-hand turn and was struck by the bus. The driver of the bus was the only one on board the bus and was not injured in the crash. The North Metro Drug Task Force is investigating a suspicious house fire in Bennett. The blaze was reported about 9:30 this morning, and according to the Adams County Sheriff's Office, one occupant was taken by ambulance to University Hospital. Witnesses report seeing another person run from the burning home. The task force was called in because of the possibility of a drug lab existing at the home. In sports, it's the Colorado Avalanche versus the Columbus Blue Jackets tonight at the Pepsi Center. Avs won in December when they last played the Blue Jackets. What's the number one diet pill in America? Xantrex 3. Rapid weight loss, incredible energy, and one amazing super pill. Xantrex 3 at stores nationwide or log on to Xantrex3.com. Traffic and your exclusive Weather Channel forecast are up next. KNRC News Time is 1:38.
Jim Conder here talking with Bev Rouleau from International Optique. Bev, fashion eyewear the best in the city and now a sale. Bev, what's up with that?
Jim, International Optique is having our annual sale now through January 15th, and it's a blowout.
I know the details. If you purchase prescription frames and lenses at International Optique at Tamarack Square or International Optique at University and Orchard, you receive a 25% discount.
It's a family affair at International Optique. Just bring your family and friends. Everyone receives 25% off their new frame and lenses.
And don't forget to use your Flex dollars while saving money. If you run out of time to use your Flex dollars, come in for a gift certificate to be used later.
Jim, the excitement about International Optique is that we carry frames with a little attitude or a lot of attitude. Either way, let our staff make sure you walk out looking beyond fabulous.
For the best in eyewear in Denver, join International Optique at Tamarack Square or International Optique at University in Orchard now through January 15th for their spectacular 25% off prescription frame and lens sale. It's not what you know, it's who you know, and we know International Optique.
KNRC News Time is 1:39. Time to go to Darren Copeland in the KNRC Traffic Center.
This traffic report brought to you by Waterway Gas in Wash. And one more accident. I was just trying to get a final seeing what was going on over there. Northbound I-25 at Evans. Three cars involved. They have a fire engine on scene, but it's on the ramp. Watch for that. Waterway, the best car wash in town, has a winter protection package for you that helps protect your car from the worst of winter snow, salt, slush, and grime. Visit them today. I'm Darren Copeland with your KNRC traffic.
I'm Valerie Seagraves with the KNRC forecast from the Weather Channel. Our temperatures will continue to rebound over the next couple of days, so it won't be so bitterly cold. We'll top out around 24 with mostly sunny skies today, and then it'll be mainly clear tonight, dropping down to about 12 for the overnight low. Look for a mix of sun and clouds, much better even tomorrow with a high around 47, upper 40s on Thursday. For the Weather Channel, I'm Valerie Seagraves on AM 1150 KNRC.
It's partly cloudy, 30 degrees. KNRC News Time is 1:41. I'm Tim McLaughlin. Our next news at 2 o'clock or when it breaks on AM 1150 KNRC.
Frankly, it's difficult to imagine that a breed of men as fierce and warlike as the Scots ever learned to embrace the niceties of a civilized life, much less advance them. I mean, there they were, traipsing around the wee glen in nothing but their bagpipes. And next thing you know, they've invented distilled liquor. Now it's Sean Connery, the Highland Games. Why, they're even making stained glass right here in Colorado. Beautiful stained glass. Extraordinary, really, that everyone can appreciate. Even men like myself. Real men who don't feel the need to toss around telephone poles in a pathetic attempt to compensate for the notion that their forefathers wore skirts.
English swine. Did you not see Braveheart? Hi, this is Martin Faith, the owner of Scottish Stained Glass. If you want to make a unique statement in your home, think leaded glass. It's private, beautiful to look at, and surprisingly affordable, with prices starting at just $145, including insulation. For a free in-home consultation, call us at 303-766-3811. 303-766-3811.
KNRC Market Watch.
Stocks are mostly higher. Only the blue chips remain lower. S&P Chief Investment Strategist Sam Stovall says the market uptrend remains intact.
The week that we could see will be a continuation of what we had in the latter part of December, where there is optimism by investors that the stock market is healthy and is back on a bullish trend.
The Dow Jones Industrial Average down 11, big board volume about 1.2 billion shares. Advancing stocks leading decline 7-6. The S&P 500 is up a fraction. The Nasdaq Composite gaining 11 points. Bonds are higher following two mediocre economic reports. The government said November factory orders fell 1.4%, and the Institute for Supply Management reported slower growth in the service sector last month. The benchmark 10-year Treasury note up 23.32 in price, the yield 4.29%. Airline stocks are doing well. Investors digesting December traffic figures from Delta, Southwest, and Alaska Airlines. All three are higher. I'm Larry Kofsky at themarketwatch.com, Wall Street Bureau.
Our contact number, 303-382-1150. We hear you. 303-382-1150. Close is your phone. 303-382-1150. KNRC.
143 on the, Lucky Tuesday edition of Enid Live. Vincent Pastore, are you a Sopranos watcher? Remember he played the part of Big Pussy? And he's sleeping with the fishes now because he got dispatched. He's going to have his own talk show in New York once a week in Westchester County. All right, I just got an email from Jerry. Jerry says, now I have been saying about Rush Limbaugh, he's lied to you about his drug use. He's been a junkie and an addict, and he hasn't told you the truth. And George Bush has lied to us about many things, about why we went to war. People's lives are at stake. And this is from Jerry. Jerry says, how can we trust someone who continually lies to us? So did you trust ex-perjurer Clinton? See, when they have no argument to make, they're always going into Bill Clinton. There's no argument to make about George Bush. He lied about Jennifer Flowers. He lied about Monica Lewinsky. He probably lied about Kathleen Willey. He lied to a grand jury and was later disbarred. Can you see your own hypocrisy? You want to answer that? I mean, Bill Clinton clearly lied about sex. You could understand why he'd lie about sex, but do you have any evidence that he lied to you about getting us into war, for example, or lied to you about something that would cost the lives of your loved ones? Going to war was a lie. The whole budget business was a lie based on lies from the George Bush administration, George W. Dickey Bush, playing Gary Cooper right now for, I hope, only 10 months longer. Gary versus Harry. In the persona of Howard Dean playing that feisty Harry Truman. We'll see who wins. I think we're more in a macho kind of a John Wayne mode where we want the good guy in the white hat to ride up in his horse. Yep, nope, bring him on. Bring him in dead or alive. And rescue us from terrorism. And it's not going to be that easy. It's way more complicated than that. And I think we really have to get involved. So here's somebody emailing me about what a liar Bill Clinton was and that I'm a hypocrite for pointing it out in the form of George W. Bush. But George W. Bush's lies have resulted in many deaths. Return of the U.S. war dead is being kept a solemn secret. The process of military honor guards carrying caskets of slain troops are kept from the public eye. The most touching moment of a slain soldier's homecoming, say those who witness it, is when the chaplain steps forward to pray. Standing over a flag-draped coffin that arrived from Iraq this month, Air Force Chaplain Robert Cannon chose this invocation. We pray and long for the day when war will be no more. An honor guard removed the aluminum, quote, transfer case. They don't call them body bags anymore. They are transfer cases. Removing the transfer case... As other military officers present received the slain service members snapped salutes. The honor guard process here at Dover, repeated hundreds of times since the Iraq war began, is dignified and reverent. And it's carried out in secret, off limits to the news media. This was not always the case. Photographs and film footage of caskets coming home from battlefields have been a stark reminder for Americans of the toll of war. During the Vietnam War, the images of caskets arriving at Dover became a staple of the nightly news. The phrase Dover Test later came to signify public tolerance or lack of it for mounting war casualties. Since 1991, the media have been banned from covering the arrival of remains at Dover. The airbase houses the military's largest mortuary, where bodies are prepared for burial before they are sent to the families' hometowns. In March, before the Iraq War began, the Pentagon clamped down on similar coverage from military installations around the world, such as Ramstein Air Base in Germany or in Afghanistan. The prohibition includes the movement or of remains at any point, the Pentagon guidelines say. The result is that images of caskets being returned to U.S. soil are not shown to the American public. The policy contrasts with Italy's national display of grief last month when 19 of that country's troops died in a suicide bombing in Iraq and received a state funeral through the streets of Rome. Remember, President Bush has not gone to... I think he visited with some of the injured in the hospital because he was in for some tests. But I don't believe he's gone to any of the funerals even now. There have been exceptions to the media ban at Dover. In February, NASA released photos of the caskets carrying the remains of the seven astronauts killed in the Columbia shuttle disaster. When fighting began in Afghanistan in 2001, reporters were allowed to cover the honor guard ritual at Ramstein in Germany. Government spokesmen say the change in March to extend a media ban to all military installations was to be sensitive to the families of those killed in Iraq. But you know that's not really the case. What the case is, they don't want you to see those bodies coming back in body bags. They don't even call them body bags. They're now called transfer cases. Joe, calling from Bailey. Hi, you're live with Enid.
How you doing, Enid?
Doing well, Joe.
I just wanted to make the analogy that it really intrigues me, including the show that follows yours. This whole thing with these ditto heads about, you know, it reminds me of the old program Welcome Back, Cotter. And they used to exchange insults with each other. But when one party lost the insult war, they would always say, up your nose with a rubber hose, because they had nothing else left to say. And that's exactly what the Republicans do with Clinton.
Right, up your nose with a rubber hose.
Right. Every time they run out of arguments, it's, well, Clinton. And it's the same thing. It's just up your nose with a rubber hose because they got nothing else to say.
Right. Oh, I think, you know what? That's really good, Joe. I thank you for bringing it up. 303-321-1150. Up your nose with a rubber hose. So here we are. We have the U.S. also discharging troops for abuse in Iraq. They abused some of the Iraqis, abusing our troops, abused prisoners at a detention center in Iraq. You wonder, I mean, here we are. We're killing people, so... How is it that soldiers abusing Iraqis are discharged dishonorably, but in fact that's the case, other than honorable conditions? So these are three soldiers, all from Pennsylvania, scheduled to face courts-martial this month, but opted to submit to a non-judicial hearing in which their conduct was judged by a commander without a jury. The acting commander found the three soldiers had maltreated prisoners at a camp in southern Iraq. He demoted two of the soldiers and ordered that all three forfeit their salaries for 2 months. All three were also discharged. The general found that Master Sergeant Lisa Marie German knocked a prisoner to the ground, repeatedly kicking him in the groin, abdomen, and head, and encouraging her subordinate soldiers to do the same. One of the stories that's not reported is the extent to which women are in combat in Iraq. It's now sort of taken for granted, but I haven't seen very much on it. I saw one very nothing much piece alluding to women in combat, but here's a woman who was dishonorably discharged for kicking a prisoner, an Iraqi prisoner, in the groin and head and encouraging her subordinate soldiers to do the same. Staff Sergeant Scott McKenzie, 38, of Clearfield, I think these are all reservists, by the way, was found to have dragged a prisoner by his shoulders and then to have held his legs apart, encouraging others to kick him in the groin while U.S. soldiers kicked him in the abdomen and head. Ouch. McKenzie was also found to have thrown the detainee face down to the ground and stepped on his previously injured arm. Ooh. The general also found McKenzie made a false sworn statement to a special agent of the U.S. Army Criminal Investigation Division. McKenzie was demoted to sergeant and received a general under honorable conditions discharge. So he's honorably discharged, I guess. And then somebody else, a 21-year-old, was found to have made a false statement to the Army's criminal investigators and to have held the detainee's legs apart while others kicked him in the groin, in addition to violently twisting his previously injured arm and causing him to scream in pain. This guy was devoted to a private, a rank two lower than the specialist that he is, and received a general under honorable conditions discharge. So I guess under honorable conditions, under honor, and then other than honorable conditions discharge. So two got, looks to me like two got honorable conditions discharge, and one got other than honorable conditions discharge. What do you think about that? 303-382-1150. I'm Enid Goldstein. You're listening to the Lucky Tuesday edition of Enid Live on AM 1150 KNRC.
Some people prefer the right wing. Some prefer the left wing. Hear both sides talk on AM 1150 KNRC.
Hi, this is Larry King. You probably think all juices are about the same when it comes to living healthy. Well, think again. Because a study from the USDA found that Welch's 100% grape juice, made from Welch's own Concord grapes, has three times the antioxidant power of grapefruit, tomato, or even orange juice. Not only that, Welch's purple grape juice has more antioxidant power per serving than any of the other fruits and vegetables that they tested too. Who would have thought that living healthy could also taste so good?
The KNRC Community Commitment.
Are drugs affecting you, your family, or a friend? Narcanon provides answers to drug addiction. They offer free assessment and referral services to over 11,000 treatment centers nationwide. For 30 years, Narcanon has successfully used a drug-free approach to long-term recovery that works. They understand the cravings, guilt, and depression associated with addiction. To find out more about Narcanon, log on to www.stopaddiction.com or call 1-800-468-468. RAD, recording artists, actors, and athletes against drunk driving, says don't take your lifestyle on the road. Designate before you celebrate. Learn more at RADD.org.
Tickets are on sale now for the 2004 KeyBank Denver Distinguished Lecture Series, featuring the dynamic lineup of Her Majesty Queen Noor on January 20th, retired General Tommy Franks on March 30th, and Steve Forbes on May 17th. Tickets start at only $50 for the three-lecture package and are on sale now. Go to www.denverlectureseries.com and expand your world by attending the 2004 KeyBank Distinguished Lecture Series, a program of junior achievement and sponsored in part by AM 1150 KNRC.
Lionel, would you join me every weeknight from 9 to midnight here on AM 1150 KNRC? Now back to Enid Goldstein.
154 on the Lucky Tuesday edition of Enid Live. As I said earlier, it's not been much reported, but a lot of women are really participating in combat to a very large extent in Iraq. Remember, there's always been the discussion whether women could participate in combat, and they have been prohibited from it. But if you're in the military and you want to advance, a lot of women in the military have agitated for the ability to participate in combat. Well, Captain Kimberly Hampton carried a lot of titles, tennis champ, only child, and after enemy fire hit the 27-year-old chopper Friday, she became the first female pilot to be killed in Iraq. Her family said that the military had confirmed that she was killed while piloting a helicopter. Her parents say that she wanted to be a pilot since the third grade. She liked to blaze a trail to be the first or the best. She was very much a perfectionist. Now, think of it. You have women in really high-profile situations in Iraq in a society. Now, Iraq was a less restricted society than definitely Saudi Arabia, where women are pretty much cloistered. But in Iraq, you had a vibrant middle class and a very well and high-functioning civil service. Iraq ran very well. It was efficient. Its bureaucracy wasn't corrupt and lazy. It was an efficiently run country and with pretty good level of education in Iraq before the war. And you had women who had professional careers in Iraq. You had women who were doctors and lawyers and did all kinds of, had jobs and didn't dress in, it was a secular society. So for those of you who still want to cling to the idea, and a majority of Americans apparently do want to cling to the idea that there's some connection between Saddam Hussein and Osama bin Laden, forget it. Osama bin Laden hated Saddam Hussein's guts, because Saddam Hussein was the head of a very secular society, and that's not what Osama bin Laden was about. So they were very much at odds in that way. So here you have, though, it still is a Muslim society, and here you have women in the military, American women, who are in there, holding their rifles and telling these guys, these men who are dressed, some of them in the long outfits, I don't know what they call them in Iraq, but in those long white outfits that they wear, you know, ordering them around, telling them what to do. And the women are looking real macho here in the pictures that I have seen. It's really very interesting. You could make a case that as the men's sperm count lowered by 30% these last 10 years, according to research that was just released, men are wearing more cosmetics. They are having pec implants, I think. They're having more cosmetic surgery. Some of them, I mean, you only used to see guys who did television wearing obvious makeup, but a lot of other guys do too. Their hair is often a color not necessarily found in nature. They're often wearing as much or more jewelry than women do, and definitely some of them smell like French tarts. I mean, they are wearing way too much fragrance. So I wonder, since there are a lot of single moms around, women are becoming... as Gloria Steinem once said, women are becoming the men that they wanted to marry. So you got a lot of women turning into breadwinners, looking real macho in Iraq, for example, hurting some of these Muslim men around who are looking at these women, American soldiers, with a bemused expression on their face. And I'm wondering whether any of our allies, the two or three that we still have left, who have sent troops into Iraq, whether any of them are women or only the Americans are sending women in. But in any event, we have the first female pilot killed in Iraq. She was a helicopter pilot. She earned a reputation as a star tennis player. She is from, Carolina, and I don't know whether it's North or one of the Carolinas. I don't know whether it's North or South Carolina. And she was 27 years old. Lost her life, and the war has taken a toll on journalists, too. They were really easy pickings in this war. 36 of them have perished since the war began, some prominent names also. So here we have, and this is a little bit mystifying to me, here we have soldiers being discharged, other than honorably, for abusing Iraqi prisoners, and one of those soldiers is a woman, Sergeant Lisa Marie German, and some of these are reservists. So these are people who are nervous because, you know, they're weekend warriors. Everybody used to make fun of them. Well, they're weekend warriors. These are the people who they had protecting the Golden Gate Bridge for the longest time after 9/11. It's like, gee, do you feel safe with these weekend warriors out there? Well, they look official, so we're trusting, inshallah, you know, we're trusting in God is all I can say. 303-382-1150. One more hour of Enid coming up, and in the next hour we're going to be joined by Elizabeth Buchan. She has written a wonderful best-selling novel called The Revenge of the Middle-Aged Woman, and she has a brand new one out called The Good Wife Strikes Back. She's here from London. She'll be at Tattered Cover tonight. Maybe she can tell us about Diana striking back. I'm Enid Goldstein. You're listening to...
Hear both sides talk. AM 1150, KNRC, Englewood, Denver. Enid Goldstein continues straight ahead. It's 2 o'clock.
Good afternoon. Partly cloudy, 29 degrees. I'm Tim McLaughlin. This report brought to you by the Air National Guard. The cold weather we've been having should be leaving soon, as we hear from National Weather Service forecaster Kyle Fredin.
Today and tonight ought to be the last day of the Arctic air. Tomorrow into Thursday, we get into the normal range, actually a little bit above, with mid-40s to lower 50s. Normal for this year is about 43 degrees in Denver.
The cold temperatures got the furnaces along the Front Range cranking last night, so much so that it was a record-setting night for natural gas usage, according to Steve Rolstad at XL Energy.
The record is now 1,945 decatherms of natural gas. The previous record was set on December 21st of 1998 when our customers used 1.7 million decatherms of natural gas.
Rolstad says the XL system is fully ready to meet the needs of customers, but he still suggests exercising conservation measures. Meantime, Sue Cobb with Denver's Human Services Department says the LEAP program, which helps low-income folks with their heating bills, has seen demand for energy assistance jump 12% over last year. She adds that those numbers are through the end of December and don't take the latest cold snap into account. Details are sketchy, but police are investigating the death of a woman at an Englewood apartment. Spokesman Jim Ulrich said officers responded to a house in South Bannock about 8:30 this morning.
We have received a call from a passerby or a neighbor of some sort reporting some sort of a domestic disturbance in this apartment building. When police officers got there, within a minute, they encountered somebody leaving the back door. door of the apartment complex that acted suspiciously. They took him into custody, and they continued to interview.
Inside the apartment, they found a woman who had been fatally beaten. Ulrich says at this point no names or other information are being released. Mayor John Hickenlooper announced yesterday that nearly $2 million was collected during the city's parking ticket late fee amnesty program. That exceeded expectations for this one-time venture. During the program, which ran from November 12th through December 31st, the city temporarily waived late penalties, enabling ticket holders to pay their original ticket amounts, essentially cutting the late ticket prices in half. A man is hospitalized in what authorities are calling a suspicious fire. Lieutenant Lori Moriarty of the North Metro Drug Task Force says the blaze was first reported in Strasbourg about 9:30 this morning.
Bennett Fire responded to a location out in Strasbourg of a flash fire with an adult male who had caught on fire during the incident.
He was taken to University Hospital, his condition not known at this time. When fire investigators found equipment used to manufacture methamphetamines and saw a second occupant running from a fire that was pretty much confined to the house's basement, they became suspicious and gave North Metro a call. Moriarty says task force crews are on scene sorting out the remains. Federal officials are releasing few details, but a spokesman for the Transportation Security Administration says all passengers on a flight bound from Paris, France to Cincinnati will be rescreened when the plane lands. TSA spokesman Darren Kaiser says the agency is focused on some intelligence information surrounding Delta Flight 43.
We have received some intelligence that we are responding to by taking a couple extra precautions. Once that plane lands, we're going to be taking it to a remote location, rescreening the passengers and their baggage before they move along on their process.
Officials say the incident was sparked in Paris after a woman wearing a jacket with wires was taken off the aircraft before the flight departed. That wiring later turned out to be a device to keep the jacket heated in cold weather. A fire continues to burn after an explosion at an industrial chemical plant in Conway, Arkansas. Two people were injured, one seriously, in the blast reported about 11 o'clock Central Time.
It looks really pretty scary out there because there's this huge black cloud, but so far they haven't expanded the evacuation area.
Arkansas Department of Emergency Management spokeswoman Jennifer Gordon said an area a half mile in radius around the Detco Industries plant has been evacuated. Detco's website says the company produces cleansers, pesticides, and aerosol products. Jury selection is underway in U.S. District Court in Manhattan in the high-profile criminal trial of Martha Stewart. Potential jurors spent the morning filling out questionnaires to determine their suitability for sitting in judgment of America's domestic diva. On Wall Street, stocks were all higher just before the close. The Dow up less than a point. NASDAQ up just over 12.5 points. The S&P is up about a point and a quarter. In sports, the Colorado Avalanche home tonight to face the Columbus Blue Jackets. When the two teams last met in December, Avs beat Columbus 5-1. Have you separated from military service and wish you had never left? Join the Air National Guard. Work part-time and earn retirement benefits. Call 1-800-2GO-ANG. That's 1-800-T-O-G-O-A-N-G. Traffic and your exclusive Weather Channel forecast are up next. KNRC News Time is 2:05.
Hi, I'm Enid Goldstein. Get up close and personal with the Colorado Symphony in the only concert hall in America where the music literally becomes the center of attraction. The CSO is offering KNRC listeners 20% off tickets in the Parquet and Mezzanine 1 sections of Betcher Concert Hall for all Masterworks and Super Pops performances. These seats put you practically in the middle of the orchestra. You can watch the conductor's every move and hear the majesty and force of the music build before you.
Join the Colorado Symphony Orchestra and pianist Chris O'Reilly for a performance of Prokofiev's Piano Concerto No. 2 on January 9th, 10th, and 11th. This masterworks performance includes Mozart and more. Tickets available at all King Supers Tickets West outlets and online at www.coloradosymphony.org.
And to get up close and personal with the CSO, call 303-893-4100. That's 303-893-4100.
KNRC News Time is 2:06. Time to go to Darren Copeland in the KNRC Traffic Center.
This traffic report is brought to you by AutoZone. Still trying to clean up that three-car accident northbound I-25 at Evans. Seeing some slowing southbound I-25 in the area of Spear. Not sure the reason for it. There is a car over on the shoulder, but really not causing any problems. But you will see some slowing as you're making your way down from I-70 into the Central Valley. Time for an oil change. Buy 6 quarts of Valvoline Max Lime Motor Oil at AutoZone and get a bottle of Max Life Fuel System Cleaner for free after mail-in rebate.
See store for details. Get in the zone, AutoZone. I'm Darren Copeland with your KNRC traffic.
I'm Valerie Seagraves with the KNRC forecast from the Weather Channel. The sharp edge from yesterday's bitter cold is wearing off a little and will get better over the next couple of days. Expect mostly sunny skies this afternoon, a high of 24, fair and 12 tonight for the overnight low, and then much, much better tomorrow. We're up around 47 for the high, and we'll see it in the upper 40s on Thursday as well. For the Weather Channel, I'm Valerie Seagraves on AM 1150 KNRC.
It's partly cloudy, 29 degrees. KNRC News Time is 2:07. I'm Tim McLaughlin. Our next news at 2:35 or when it breaks on AM 1150 KNRC.
And now the Enid Goldstein Show continues on AM 1150 KNRC.
2:07, 7 minutes after 2 o'clock. Welcome to the Lucky Tuesday edition of Enid Live. I'm yours until 3 o'clock, and with me live in studio is Elizabeth Buchan. I'm going to spell her last name because I have mispronounced it, and I probably everybody else has too, B-U-C-H-A-N, and you will know her because she wrote a bestseller. She wrote the book, and the second she wrote the book, it shot right up to the bestseller list. It was called Revenge of the Middle-Aged Woman, and anybody who's had their husband run off with Amber, the cocktail waitress, who's half their age, will identify, and she has a brand new book out called The Good Wife Strikes Back, and she's going to be at Tattered Cover tonight, Cherry Creek, at 7:30. Elizabeth, thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, it's a real pleasure.
Talk to me about how you came to write the first book, The Revenge of the Middle-Aged Woman, and talk right into, bring the microphone really close to you. You can bring it close to you.
Is that close enough?
A little closer. Bring it all, you can, it'll move. You can just bring it like that. All right.
Well, revenge, came about because I used to look at what was going on around me, and there were a lot of marriages disintegrating, and there were a lot of very wounded wives left behind in particular, and men wandering off with the cocktail waitress. So I thought to myself...
with the cocktail waitress, with or without the implants?
Probably with the implants. So I started thinking, well, actually, what does this mean? And it meant, really, that in the end, probably the person who came off worst was the husband, because he found himself very often out of time with a very, you know, demanding young wife who wanted to start up the whole thing again, the family, the domesticity, the big house, all wanting that to happen, and the husband just wanting a bit of peace and quiet and time to be adventurous and to sign off a bit from mainstream caring for children and mainstream job, if you like, to start thinking about other things. But who was left, once they'd picked up the pieces and were beginning to feel better about themselves, who was left feeling stronger and better? Well, very often the abandoned wife.
That's, who, in the beginning, yes, was feeling devastated.
Absolutely. In the beginning was feeling completely devastated, felt that her life had collapsed, her spirit had collapsed, her mind had collapsed. But as she begins to look back over her life and to put together the pieces, and she's not one to say, actually, it isn't my fault. She's quite good at looking and saying, well, actually, I made mistakes there, and I should have patrolled the boundaries of this marriage a bit more particularly here. But having said that, I'm going to climb up this mountain, and I'm going to get to the top, and I'm going to look down. And that's precisely what she did. And she embodies something that I came across and I've been thinking, which is that old Spanish proverb, living well is the best revenge.
But let me be a devil's advocate here. I loved reading the book, and it was well done. Does it happen that way in real life so often, the happier ending where the wife gets revenge, or is she living now in impoverished circumstances because he was the earner and she wasn't earning as much? She is now, the Amber, the cocktail waitress, has transmogrified herself into the trophy wife.
Trophy wives are expensive.
They are expensive, and emotionally and financially.
Absolutely. And perhaps Rosie, the Roses, my heroine, who's been left behind, will not always triumph in the way that perhaps is suggested in the book. But I think mentally the process is true. And I can't feel that Rose, in the end, actually loses out. I think if she has undergone this sort of process in the way that I tried to do in the book, I think she gets to the top of that mountain in the end.
Well, that book shot to the top of the bestseller list and is in the process, we hope, of becoming a film.
Yes, it's been the film rights have been bought.
Okay, Revenge of the Middle-Aged Woman, and now you have a brand new book called The Good Wife Strikes Back. Tell us, what's this one about? I've read the other one. I have not yet read this one.
Well, if Revenge of the Middle-Aged Woman was about living well is the best revenge, this one is a much more sort of simple question, which is, what is a wife? What is a good wife today? Because it's changed. A wife for my grandmother was quite different from what a wife is for me. And I thought I'd look at a very particular kind of wife, a sort of Jackie O. Hillary Clinton downsized political wife.
Well, we have one of those in this state, I think, a little bit. Maybe it won't fill. It isn't so congruent with your description, but they have just separated, and he has made his career on family values. And I remember a Masterpiece Theater, which we see in this country, but it was an English production. And I forget what it was, but he was a powerful politician, and she sabotaged. He'd been betraying her for years, and she finally got back at him, and she became the powerhouse.
The revenge. No, this is the good wife. She decides. Well, it was all to do with the fact that I started to wake up in the morning thinking to myself, hey, why do I feel so well? And the answer was, both my children had begun to peel away from home. One was off the payroll and got a job. The other was at university. So I was beginning to think, life is so much more interesting. I feel so much more energized. The texture and the intellectual challenge of life had sort of come back, and the zest and the energy. So I was thinking about the role of the wife and the good wife, who serves out her time with her children, and being the helpmeet to an alpha male, who is the politician in The Good Wife Strikes Back, suddenly finding, after the daughter begins to leave home and start travel and leave her mother behind, Fanny, the heroine, says, I think I want to begin to ask questions about my life. I want to find out where I want to go and what I want to do and whether or not I want to make changes. And so she abandons her husband, her politician husband, Will, who's very cross, and goes off to Italy and finds a derelict old house and lives in there for a month or two and starts to look around her, to think, to sit on the step with her chin in her hand and say, well, what are these questions? And gradually the questions come to her and she begins to find the answers. And I think that's a process that comes to a lot of us, and this is men as well as women, in middle life. They have a bit more time and a bit more energy to start this kind of process, which springboards them into another level and into another level of being, I think. And that's what the book is about.
In your experience, when these questions come to people, do they take the time to try to answer them, or to avoid answering them? Do they make their lives busier because these are difficult questions sometimes to confront?
Absolutely. And, of course, it depends on the circumstances and the character. But I think if you're in any way inclined to work through your personal inner housekeeping, this is the time you're going to start doing it. When you're in
Don't you ask these questions all the way through if you're inclined?
Sure.
If you're more introspective, do they only come to you in middle life?
Sure. No, but when you're in your 20s and 30s, you're caught up in the frantic business of your job, your career, your motherhood, or your parenthood, if you're a man. And I think the drudgery and fatigue is intense very often for a lot of women, and they're trying to meld together all kinds of levels of their lives. They just don't have the time. It's only when the drudgery, the physical sort of connection that you have with your children begins to fall away, do you find the time. And if you're going to do that internal housekeeping, then you will begin to do it.
My guest is Elizabeth Buchan. Her new book, The Good Wife Strikes Back, it's a novel. You can meet her tonight at Tattered Cover, Cherry Creek, at 7:30. What is the definition, if you were to define it, of a good wife? How is it different from the good wife in grandmother's time?
The good wife now is a helpmeet, I think, on both a practical and an intellectual and emotional level that certainly wasn't asked of my grandmother. My grandmother was not there to debate the questions of the day or to put in any intellectual sort of structure into how they lived their lives or the objectives of my grandparents. Whereas today, I think women would not only demand it, they would just assume it. It would be automatic. And when my daughter reads a book like The Good Wife Strikes Back and says, Mum, what's all the fuss about? We know that there has been a profound cultural change and a change and a profound change in sensibility. And a wife today, I mean, things are stacked against women because we cannot alter biology. Biology is very unkind and very unfair in many ways. And a lot of women, particularly in their 20s and 30s, and I was certainly guilty of this, find themselves very angry and very frazzled. And when I started thinking about this, you came to the conclusion that there was no way around this problem of biology, so you just had to get on with it. And I also came to the conclusion that a wife, if she really wants to make this work, and I think most of us want to make our partnerships work, will say, okay, let's really look at this in the round and start to play the waiting game. I can't have everything in my 20s and 30s, but when I'm older, I probably can begin to achieve it. And the good wife will be prepared to take that long view and to play out her partnership. Doesn't always have to be conventionally married, taking that long view.
When you say achieve it, what is the it that is deferred for later to achieve? Is it some professional fulfillment? Is it, in your case, you have been an editor. I mean, how did you do this? You were raising two children. What was your husband engaged in doing?
He's a publisher, too. He publishes history and philosophy and in a British firm.
Okay. And you did everything in the beginning from writing blurbs to for books.
That's right.
To writing children's books, to writing various forms of fiction. And then you probably developed as a fiction writer.
I did.
It takes years to develop.
One of the great tricks in life, I think, is to know whether you're an early flower or a late bloomer, and I knew I was a late bloomer. So I always regarded my work in publishing and in fiction and as a fiction editor as a sort of apprenticeship for when I was going to write properly. And I waited till I was about 35 before I started. And my children were a little bit older because it is extraordinary how demanding and draining of energy and emotion and intellectual coherence having young children can be. I'm not assuming, I mean, some women do manage it and manage it effortlessly, and my admiration for them knows no bounds. But I certainly struggled and stuttered and became angry and frustrated and felt that it was too much to take on at that stage. I had to wait.
What, if you have a definition of the good wife, what constitutes the good husband?
The good husband
today, now, in a whole changed cultural climate.
Well, I think the good husband probably has to become more like the good wife, doesn't he? They have to be prepared to concede that their lives have to be lived on several levels, and the domestic is just as important, the parenting and the domestic just as important as their jobs. And even if you're an alpha male who's out there raring and tearing to go, you can make yourself, by an act of will, pay attention to these areas just as much as women can and do.
One of the pieces of research that seems to be emerging is the old cliche was, nobody wanders if the marriage is happy. But there seems to be evidence now that, in fact, you can have a marriage that you think is fine, and your character in Revenge of the Middle-Aged Woman had such a marriage that she thought was fine. But I've been reading, actually, other reports of this. And then suddenly, your husband didn't intend to leave you. He didn't intend to leave the marriage. But at his workplace, he becomes intimately involved. Not necessarily sexually intimately involved, but he becomes... he shares a lot of himself with perhaps a coworker, and then it advances and it becomes sexually intimate. And before he knows it, he's in love with this person, mm-hmm. and the marriage is decimated. Does that happen a lot, do you think? Can you talk about that? Because the old cliche was nobody's going to stray unless it's a bad marriage, and so therefore the other woman can feel not guilty about having broken up a marriage. It must have been in bad shape to begin with, she can tell herself as a rationalization.
No, it probably wasn't in bad shape, but it was probably coasting. And that's one of the things in The Revenge of the Middle-Aged Woman I wanted to make clear.
Because you said she wasn't, that the wife, that Rose wasn't properly patrolling
precisely.
Her marriage. What do you mean by that, and what can you do?
I think she probably felt that she should have listened harder to her husband at the various points, but she was feeling cross and angry and fatigued herself. She should have been more wary. She should have just looked a bit sharper at her own practices, because she was so busy at that point working as well as being a mother, because she started to have a part-time job. I think this is probably true of a lot of marriages. Just looking around me back at home in London, the involvement, as you've just described, of a husband or a partner in the office with someone else, and suddenly the jolt of sexual attraction coming in to spice this particular new setup, new interest at work, suddenly cuts in half a marriage, and it careens out of control. And I think if you haven't been looking quite hard, if you haven't been patrolling those boundaries, you are completely taken by surprise.
Can you, when you patrol, quote, patrol those boundaries, like you put your officer's cap on and your nightstick, you swing it around the Viagra bottle a couple of times, what can you... In other words, you're saying, in Rose's case, your character in Revenge of the Middle-Aged Woman, you're talking about paying more attention to what the husband needs, being there more in the marriage, being more present in the marriage.
I think it's not so much what the husband needs, because that sounds as though you're being subservient.
Like your custodial care.
Exactly. No, what you're saying, what you should be doing is what the marriage needs. And what the marriage needs is your own needs, i.e. the woman's needs, just as much as the men. So maybe you should be going in there and negotiating and making your wishes known and making the territory that you plan to walk over more obvious to the other side. Because, I mean...
I think that's a prescription for the other side taking a powder. But I don't know. I've never been married. I can't. I'm signing up, though, for lessons.
You know, it is true in a way that men can be very emotionally unambitious. So I think you have to be ambitious for them.
They're wearing fragrance. They're shaving under their arms now. They're wearing, they wear more jewelry than a woman, and their sperm count is down by 30%. I don't know what's a man anymore. I mean, at Goldstein, my guest is Elizabeth Buchan. Her new book is called The Good Wife Strikes Back. You can meet her at Tattered Cover, Cherry Creek. Tonight, 7:30, more as we continue. You're listening to the Lucky Tuesday edition of Enid Live on AM 1150 KNRC.
Greg Dobbs, named Best Radio Talk Show Host by Westword, AM 1150 KNRC.
If you haven't heard the big news about dieting, listen closely. The experts are now saying that low-carb diet plans do work. But if the thought of eating nothing but meat sounds scary to you, continue to listen closely, because the next 30 seconds could change your life. Introducing UltraCarb. UltraCarb is the original carb-blocking, fat-burning supplement guaranteed to help you lose up to 20 pounds in the next month without exhausting workouts or life-changing diets. With UltraCarb, you can continue to eat the foods you love, pasta, pizza, and bread, and still lose weight. After blocking the carb, UltraCarb works with your body's natural fat-burning mechanism to rid your body of unwanted pounds. Imagine looking in the mirror a month from now and seeing the thinner, happier you. And because UltraCarb is 100% guaranteed to work, you have nothing to lose except unwanted pounds. Call now to find out how you can receive a one-month supply free with your order.
Call now, 1-800-451-6432. That's 1-800-451-6432. Lose unwanted pounds 100% safe and guaranteed. 1-800-451-6432.
Wow, I can't believe it. 50 years. Hi, this is Keith Lair with my sister Linda asking you to come see Lair Fireplace and Patio for all your fireplace needs and help us celebrate our 50th year in business.
Lair's is truly a family business. With our brother Ken at our Arvada store at 81st and Sheridan, I'm at our Littleton store on South Broadway, just north of Arapahoe Road, and Keith is at our original store in Denver at Holly and Evans.
When our father, Joe Lair, started in 1954, he had a very simple philosophy: sell quality products and treat your customers fairly. You know what? It's worked for 50 years.
That's why we carry quality fireplaces and inserts from Napoleon.
If you're building, remodeling, or converting an existing fireplace to gas, check out the superior construction and efficiency of Napoleon.
You know, the fireplace is the focal point of most rooms, so do it right. Don't skimp. Our expert installers can give you a free estimate right in your home.
That's Lair Fireplace and Patio, Denver's most trusted fireplace specialist for 50 years.
AM 1150 KNRC is proud to continue a Denver broadcast tradition. The State of Colorado, produced in conjunction with the Denver Press Club and Rocky Mountain Reflections. The State of Colorado is where Greg Dobbs hosts a panel of Denver journalists discussing the major stories of the week every Friday morning from 8 to 9:30. It's the most in-depth analysis and perspective on Denver radio. The State of Colorado is brought to you in part by Denver Center Attractions and International Optique. Friday mornings at 8 on AM 1150 KNRC. And
now, the Enid Goldstein Show continues on AM 1150 KNRC.
2:26 on the Lucky Tuesday edition of Enid Live. I'm yours until 3 o'clock with me in studio, Elizabeth Buchan. She is the author of the best-selling book, Revenge of the Middle-Aged Woman. It shot to the top of the bestseller list. It was really wonderful to read. And she has a new book out called The Good Wife Strikes Back. It's a novel. You can meet her tonight at Tattered Cover, Cherry Creek, at 7:30. And Elizabeth, since you are here from London, and we are just getting word about the fact that the Mirror and the libel laws are so stiff in London, I'm very surprised. The Mirror either is verging on incredible stupidity, or they are very solid in their reporting, but they are naming Prince Charles as the senior royal who Diana alleges was out to murder her, and she seems almost prescient. She knew she was going to die in a car accident, and allegedly she had some advance word, and we have had Nicholas Davies on, who is one of her many biographers, yes. And I think he had a career with Robert Maxwell, who is popularly known as the bouncing check, but that's another story. And he believes that there was a conspiracy by British intelligence, and the tabs are reporting that she was, in fact, pregnant, and if she was pregnant by Dodi Fayed, here you have the mother of a future king of England. She is pregnant by a Muslim man, allegedly. And a loose cannon, and so much even as or more popular than the Queen herself, with a lot of power. So you can see all the makings for why they might want to get rid of her. But when you're talking about the revenge of the middle-aged woman, here she is exerting her revenge from the grave. She was, when she was married to Charles, Camilla was the ghost in the relationship, the third party. Now that Charles and Camilla are openly living together in London, Diana is the ghost in the relationship and striking back from the grave. Could you comment on
that? Well, this is almost like Greek tragedy. I mean, you know, here we have the cycles of family tragedy being played out. It's quite extraordinary. Revenge and threats and death and untimely possible murder. I'm completely flabbergasted by the Mirror publishing Prince Charles's name. They must know something that we don't, because there would have been lawyers crawling all over any allegation they might want to make.
Particularly because the libel laws are so tough in England, and also having to do with a royal figure, because they had the palace lawyers are usually crawling all over those
and
stories.
I have to say, of all the names that I was thinking about under that blacked out bit in that letter, Prince Charles was the very last one.
Nicholas Davies says that the senior liaison, there's always a liaison from intelligence to the royal family, and that the liaison is Prince Philip. Is that true? Do you know that to be the case?
It's possible. Anything is possible in this extraordinary family saga, which gets odder and odder.
What are people saying in London? I mean, what we're reading is that there are a lot of conspiracy theories, that the English public is believing some of them. What are you noting?
Well, I think, to begin with, the conspiracy theories were poo-pooed by everybody. They said it's a lot of fairy tales. It's people just exercising their imagination. They're getting drunk and talking stupid things in the pub or something. But as the years have gone on, and these theories and these ideas and these stories and these conspiracy ideas have refused to go away, people are beginning to say, well, actually, maybe there is something in this. She was a loose cannon. There was a potential clash of interest. There was a potential sort of encroachment on the royalty by Diana having a love affair with Dodi Fayed.
Inquest? 6.5 years. The law reads, as I see it reported, that any British subject dying abroad must submit to, there has to be an inquest when the body is brought back. Is the most prominent, and no inquest until 6.5 years later, and only because of these allegations.
Oh, no, you're coming up against national boundaries here, because until the French had done all their bit, we couldn't, I gather, start with our inquest. That may have been very convenient to Her Majesty's government.
But did it take them 6.5 years to do the inquest?
Well, you know, there might have been some toing and froing behind the scenes saying, look, actually, don't hurry.
take your time.
Take your time. And I rather suspect that might have been the case. But now they absolutely have to get on with it. And funnily enough, just coincidentally, the inquest on Dodi himself is opening at the same time as Diana. And there must, I think the authorities or the powers behind the throne are scratching their heads over this one. They probably didn't want that to happen.
Well, and Dodi's father, has been agitating for this for quite some time.
Oh, yes, he's been absolutely relentless. And I have to say, rather courageous in his pursuit of getting what he sees as justice for his son and for Diana.
A man who has been denied British citizenship every time he applied, even though he's very rich and owns Harrods. England has said, you know what,
well,
not our class, darling.
Yes, you know, God knows what's been going on there either, but he must have offended the establishment and the powers behind the scenes in some way.
All right, now there is a big a metropolitan chief, you know, somebody who's going to be in charge of finding out whether there was any kind of a conspiracy. If that person were to find out that, in fact, there was a conspiracy spearheaded by MI6,
yeah,
the, you know, the equivalent of the CIA, how could he ever say that and not completely rock the foundation of the royal family? He could never say it, and if he did, MI6 would exact its revenge. So I can't imagine that the truth will ever really emerge, or the truth that really, confident.
You're right, because you can't actually again say, well, the MI6 chaps went and sort of did something with the car and spiked the chauffeur's drink.
Here's what's being alleged, that there was a little white car, a Fiat Uno, and that it was ahead of the chauffeured car that was driving Dodi and Diana, and that they blinked a white laser kind of a light that would blind the chauffeur. He crashed, and then also that the ambulance took its time getting to the French hospital.
Well, actually, of all what you've just outlined, I would have thought that the ambulance arriving last is the least possible of it, because I'm quite sure they wouldn't have been in on this scenario. If you got an elaborate plot to kill someone like this, I don't think you would have involved the emergency services. I think that's probably, that just so happened. And they probably felt her condition with her heart, the torn
aorta.
Yeah, that's what happened. And they didn't dare move her too quickly. I wouldn't put it past MI6, actually, to have arranged this. You know, I'm sure they've done some things in their time, and she was a problem. No doubt about it. And whether or not we get to know about it directly, I think it's pretty unlikely. But we have now a very vociferous press. The art of the leak is perfection in the UK. We leak like no other place.
Give me an example, because your libel laws are so tough, and yet in the face of the internet, where anybody can get on an internet site in the United States or in France if they live in the UK, they can find out what those blacked-out names are.
Sure, well, that happened with Prince Charles quite recently, where there'd been allegations made about royal servants and his involvement in it, and we were not allowed, our press was not allowed to do anything about it, but everybody who worked in the press knew what it was.
Now that you're in the United States, the allegation was that
there had been some, I can't remember the details, to be honest, but there was a rape, and Charles knew about it, and had
but was
gone
Charles
to the authorities.
Involved in having, was it alleged that Charles was involved in having sex with a palace servant who was a male? Was that the allegation?
I think that was one of the allegations, yes.
Yeah.
And then there was a separate incident of alleged rape of a royal servant. Now, I don't know who was supposed to allegedly to have raped him, but he was said to have known about it and not gone to the police, allegedly. But be careful here.
Right.
But the point was that this all got published on the internet and in the Italian papers, and before you could say knife, we all knew, the whole of Great Britain knew about it. So
the libel
laws... The art of the leak is, you know...
Also, you might tell our listeners, there's a wonderful satirical magazine called Private Eye.
Yep.
And which Spy was modeled on for its short longevity, or shortjevity, I guess it would be a better way of putting it. And they have names, because of the libel laws, they have names. You have to know what the lingo is. The queen is Brenda.
That's
is that right.
Right? That's right.
And if somebody is bonking somebody else, if they're having an illegitimate affair, they don't say so-and-so is bonking or sleeping with somebody else. They say so-and-so and so-and-so are engaged in Ugandan discussions.
That's correct. So if anybody is tired and emotional, it means they're drunk. So there's a great
what else is the code? Tired and emotional means
so
drunk.
So somebody who's tired and emotional might have been found having Ugandan discussions with a lady named Brenda.
Were there any rumors about the Brenda, the queen? Actually, I did hear a rumor when I was covering, I forget, the wedding or the funeral, that it would have been rumored many years before, or I think maybe I saw it in a book, it had been rumored many years before that she'd been very close to, was it Lord Porchester or somebody, and that Andrew looks an awful lot like him. Do you believe any of that?
No, I don't think so.
But do you believe the rumors that Prince Philip was never very faithful?
Well, I think possibly that may be true. And, you know, they came to an arrangement and their marriage has worked. And
whatever that means.
There is supposed to be a row of grace and favor houses in Windsor that house a whole lot of ladies.
Explain to our listeners what grace and favor houses are.
Grace and favor are houses which are owned by an estate or by the royal family and are given to someone to live in at a very small rent.
Yeah, so they just let them live there.
Grace and favor.
Yeah, well, oh, this is so juicy. My guest is Elizabeth Buchan. Her brand new book is called The Good Wife Strikes Back. You can meet her tonight at Tattered Cover, Cherry Creek. It has been a great pleasure to have you on today. Thank you so much. Did you ever meet Princess Diana?
No, I didn't.
Or any of the royal family?
I met Prince Charles, yes.
Have you?
At a wedding, yeah.
I saw him at Ascot once before he got married.
Yeah.
From a distance.
Yeah.
Well, he didn't say hi. You have met and what?
Yes, one of his cousin's relations I was at university with and I used to see quite a lot of. And when this particular chap got married, I was at the wedding. So.
What's your take? Yeah, I think he's a very lovely guy. He seems bright, slightly befuddled, but bright and his heart in the right place. I
don't think he's befuddled, but I think, you know, he can be very tortured because he's had a rough ride over various things, but he's someone who does desperately try to do good works and succeeds, particularly with the young, young and disadvantaged through his Prince's Trust. He does help to give them jobs and a kind of education and a skill.
And what about Camilla? What is the word on her? Dominic Dunn says witty and wonderful. Is that really true or no?
Well,
some people say she smells like a horse and looks like an old trout. Perhaps a mad cow.
Well, I was in the hairdresser once and I turned my head to the left and there she was having her hair done. And she was remarkably pretty. Her photographs don't do her justice.
Really?
Yeah, and rather not as large as she looks in photographs. She had a very neat figure and very fresh face.
Well, I think being royal would be a great job for 3 years, and beyond that, you're in a velvet prison. Elizabeth Buchan, thank you so much for joining us. The new book, a novel, probably just as delicious as The Revenge of the Middle-Aged Woman, is The Good Wife Strikes Back. Do yourself a favor. Go to Tattered Cover, Cherry Creek tonight at 7:30. You'll have a wonderful evening. I'm Enid Goldstein. You're listening to the Lucky Tuesday edition of Enid Live on AM 1150 KNRC. 2:38, time to check into the KNRC newsroom for an update from Tim McLaughlin. Hi, Tim.
Hi, Enid. Good afternoon. Partly cloudy, 29 degrees. I'm Tim McLaughlin. This report brought to you by AutoZone. The cold weather that's been hitting the Front Range is on its way out. The National Weather Service says the Arctic air mass that's been hanging over the metro area will be gone by tomorrow, with a return to more seasonal temperatures. Denver's parking amnesty program resulted in nearly $2 million coming into the city's coffers. The amnesty program, which ran from November 12th through December 31st, allowed people to pay just the face value of the parking ticket without the late fees. The Colorado State Patrol is investigating a crash in Boulder County that resulted in the death of a 17-year-old high school student this morning. A school bus hit the student's car as the student was making a left turn. Only the bus driver was on board the bus and was not injured. In sports, the Colorado Avalanche take on the Columbus Blue Jackets tonight at the Pepsi Center. In December, the Avs beat the Blue Jackets 5-1 when the two teams last played. Time for an oil change. Buy 6 quarts of Valvoline MaxLife Motor Oil at AutoZone and get a bottle of MaxLife Fuel System Cleaner for free after mail-in rebate. See store for details. Get in the zone. AutoZone. Traffic and your exclusive Weather Channel forecast are up next. KNRC News Time is 2:39.
The fuel-injected big block, the V8, the precision-engineered supercharged hot rod. I'm Jason Priestley. Join me for a spin in TLC's newest series, Rides. It's custom cars from conception to modification to acceleration. High-speed, in-depth rides. Get your motor running. Tonight at 9, only on TLC.
Hey, what are you doing on the computer?
Believe it or not, I just finished our taxes.
Come on.
Yeah, with TurboTax software.
Are you sure we did it right?
Yes. TurboTax asks you simple questions, and it puts the answers on all the right forms.
Well, what if we made a mistake?
Well, it checks for errors and misdeductions, and calculations are guaranteed accurate.
Whoa.
I know. So now I can print our return and mail it, or file it electronically, and we're done.
I've always liked that TurboTax.
Really?
TurboTax. Taxes made easy, taxes done right. Available at a retailer near you. See box for guaranteed details.
KNRC News Time is 2:40. Time to go to Darren Copeland in the KNRC Traffic Center.
This traffic report brought to you by Scandinavian Designs. And finally getting back to normal. We're still seeing a little bit of slowing northbound I-25 at Evans. They cleared that three-car accident, but I imagine it's probably just a matter of time before we get another one in there. Everything else still looking good. We are seeing some slowing due to an earlier accident southbound I-25 approaching Speer. Come to Scandinavian Designs winter clearance sale and get extra savings on select pieces for every room in your home. Happening now at their Denver and Westminster stores. I'm Darren Copeland with your KNRC traffic.
I'm Valerie Seagraves with the KNRC forecast from the Weather Channel. It is not as sharply cold today as it was yesterday, even though our temperatures are still well below seasonal norms. With mostly sunny skies, we'll top out around 24 for the high today, 12 for the overnight low tonight, and then it's going to be much warmer tomorrow with a high of 47, upper 40s on Thursday. For the Weather Channel, I'm Valerie Seagraves on AM 1150 KNRC.
It's partly cloudy, 29 degrees. KNRC News Time is 2:42. I'm Tim McLaughlin. Our next news at 3 o'clock or when it breaks on AM 1150 KNRC.
Shopping for a mortgage should be no different from shopping for any big-ticket item, a car, a refrigerator, a house. You're looking for the best possible value available. Investment Property Funding Incorporated offers just that. The best mortgage rates available, starting at 1.25% for primary residences and just 1.65% for investment properties, with no points, no junk fees, and no surprises at closing. Increase your cash flow by hundreds, if not thousands of dollars per month. Investment Property Funding can handle all your mortgage needs with your choice of fixed rate, adjustable rate, or interest-only programs. And a full menu of options for savvy, no-nonsense borrowers like you. Don't wait. Get the rates you deserve today by calling the professionals at Investment Property Funding Incorporated at 303-531-8508. That's 303-531-8508. Your mortgage experts, 303-531-8508, or online at ipfunding.com.
KNRC Market Watch.
Wall Street's major indexes finished mixed following a weaker-than-expected report on the services sector. Another report showed factory orders falling 1.4% in November. That's the biggest drop in more than 3 years. Let's take a look at those numbers now. The Dow Industrials lost 5 points to 10,539. The NASDAQ rose 10 points to 2057. The S&P 500 added a point to 1124. Big board volume was about 1.5 billion shares. Advancers beat decliners by about 130 stocks. Caterpillar was the biggest percentage drag on the Dow today, shedding about 2%. Caterpillar's drop came a day after the equipment maker hit a new 52-week high. Sun Microsystems helped keep the NASDAQ in the green today, climbing 7%. A Merrill Lynch analyst has raised his quarterly revenue target on Sun. Once again on Wall Street, the Dow is down 5 points. I'm Steve Orr from the newsroom at MarketWatch.com.
Our contact number, 303-382-1150.
We hear you.
303-382-1150. Close is your phone. 303-382-1150. KNRC.
2:44 on the Tuesday edition of Enid Live. I'm yours until 3 o'clock. And if you just tuned in, you have missed a delightful author. Her name is Elizabeth Buchan. She's here from London. Her new book is called The Good Wife Strikes Back. And if you're a fan of her previous book, which is, was a New York Times bestseller, was The Revenge of the Middle-Aged Woman. And it got a lot of great reviews, and it was a lot of fun to read. So I think it's worth checking out her new book. And you can check her out as well. You'll have fun tonight. Go to Tattered Cover, Cherry Creek at 7:30. This is what we love about our bookstores and our independent bookstores. You have an evening's worth of entertainment. It costs you nothing. You don't even really have to buy the book, although I guess they'd like it if you did, but it's definitely never demanded. And you get to hear an author talk, and you get to ask questions and hear them answered. And in every way, it's a wonderful evening. And as I said, there's no charge for it. I want to bring this to your attention. This is Arkansas preparing to execute a mentally ill inmate. The voices inside Charles Singleton's head vary in volume and number, regardless of whether he's taken medication for his schizophrenia. Inside his Arkansas cell, he says he can often hear voices that speak of killing him. His attorney says his 44-year-old client welcomes the scheduled Tuesday night execution he faces because he's tired of living with mental illness. He understands that he will be put to death, and he understands why the current legal standards to qualify for execution, said his attorney. He is, however, rational only when he's on medication. It is that fact, as well as an 18-year-old Supreme Court ruling barring execution of the insane, that his attorney, some members of legal and medical communities, and death penalty critics point to in their opposition to Singleton's execution. If he is artificially made to be competent, then the situation is an oxymoron, said a New York-based attorney who has represented clients in death penalty cases. But the prosecutor in the case claims that the defendant was clearly sane at the time of the crime, therefore unaffected by the Supreme Court ruling. I do not feel he's being medicated in order to put him to death. He is being medicated to keep him healthy, to control him. So he's only lucid when he's on medication. The law says you can't execute somebody who's insane. He's insane if he's not on medication, but he's about to be executed. He welcomes the execution because the voices he hears in his head are so distressing that he walks around in a body that is its own prison. And actually, I have a friend whose brother is in the same sort of situation, who is schizophrenic, whose voices are telling him, whose voices torture him, essentially. They've not been able, in the case of my friend, they have not been able to find the right mix of medications to control it. He was on it for a while, on medication for a while, but he hated the side effects. And then I think he refused to take his medications. And also, can I talk about that, Joe? Yeah, Joe says I can. Joe's sister is in the same situation where he's going through the same thing with his sister. They don't want to take their medications because the side effects are so awful, and they blur the edges of the personality. In the case of my friend, and they think they're being, you want to come in here and talk to me about this? They think they're being poisoned, so they don't want to take their meds. They think people are being conspiring against them. But in the case of Arkansas here, they're going to execute this mentally ill inmate who is actually looking forward to it because I suppose it releases him from the torture of these voices coming at him from his own head. Joe Anderson, our producer, has a sister who is how old, Joe?
She is 27 now, I think.
She's 27 years old, and she was diagnosed with schizophrenia how long ago?
About 5 or 6 years ago. Usually when most schizophrenics, they seem normal through mostly the teenage years, and then they kind of late adolescence kind of starts to appear, and they start acting weird and stuff.
At 18, 19, 20, something like that, because that's exactly what happened with my friend's brother. He was in college. I think he was like a sophomore in college, junior, mm-hmm. something like that. And that's when they began to notice things, and that's finally the mm-hmm. diagnosis was made. What happened in your sister's case?
Well, she had a failed attempt at suicide, and that kind of alarmed everybody, and got her into the institution. You know, I was just after high school with me, so she was about 20, like I said, 20 or so.
And you are the younger brother?
I am the younger brother.
Okay, so you're a little bit younger than she is. Mm-hmm. Okay. And so now they make a diagnosis and they try to keep her medicated?
Medication, you know. She lives, never had a really job or anything, so she lived with my parents for a long while. But just this year we had to, you know, pretty much institutionalize her. She's in a group home now, but
They put in a group home before they were able to stabilize her? Because in my friend's brother's case, they won't take him into a group home unless he's stabilized.
Well, I think she's stabilized. Like I said, I don't live with my family anymore. I'm here in Denver, there in California, so I can't keep too close a pulse on a thing. But she seems, when I saw her over the holidays, she seemed pretty stabilized and pretty much going along with the situation. And she likes her group home, and it's a good place where she you know, has supervision and people, you know, watch her and give her medication on her schedule. And stuff.
She gets to go out? Do they have group trips to the movies or here and there?
Exactly,
shopping malls?
She likes to volunteer. She's a big animal lover, so they try and get her involved in volunteering at the local animal shelter, you know, walking dogs and sometimes bathing them, you know, doing stuff like that. So they have a sense of purpose. But like you said in the article, she has voices in her head and they tell her to do strange things. And,
like, what do they tell her to do?
It's hard to explain. They don't tell her to do anything, you know.
It's not like Son of Sam where they say, go kill that person.
Yeah.
Do anything.
I don't think she hears those kind of things. A lot of it's just the paranoia. For the longest time, she thought she was being stalked. And so she was always paranoid. The doors always had to be locked, you know, if I go out and maybe go down the street for a burger and come back, and I left the door unlocked, you know, I'd hear about it, you know, Joe, why is the door unlocked, you know, you know, so it's just really weird, and, you know, and being in a constant state of fear, you know, sometimes you do wish you were better off, you know.
Did she take her meds?
It's always been a struggle. When she was, I don't know how she is with the group home, but with my parents, you know, that was another thing. She was paranoid because the, you know, the pills aren't pleasant to take. You know, they're powerful. They have really bad side effects.
What are some of the side effects?
I think the problem, the big deal my sister had is that they made her feel bloated and fat. You know, so
and they take the edge off your personality. You're a little bit sleepy, a little bit dopey.
Exactly. You know, you ask her to do a chore or something, and you go, well, I can't. I'm medicated. So they're kind of, you know, it was a funny thing when she got into the group home. She couldn't use that excuse anymore because they're all medicated. Yeah. So that doesn't fly there. But, it's an interesting thing.
If I were to ask you about this Arkansas situation where they're preparing to execute a man who is suffering from schizophrenia, he is only lucid when he's on medication, but the law says you can't execute somebody who, and he's looking forward to the execution because he's looking forward to being released from the torture of these voices that are torturing him, telling him all these torturous things.
I'm torn. I'm not walking in that guy's shoes. I have some experience with my sister and, I'd be hard put to make a judgment about that. I would say institutionalize him for if it's a lifetime.
Well, he's in prison.
Okay. Well, prison obviously. So.
And they are alleging that he was actually sane. Although, boy, is that ever a malleable description?
Exactly.
What does that mean?
Some people think I'm sane.
Well, would they be right or not? We'll see about that. Well, we'll have to hold the sanometer over your head and see if it registers into the green zone or the red zone.
Yeah, exactly.
But prosecutors are alleging that he was sane at the time that the crime was committed. And so therefore, and the state is apparently preparing to put him to death. He welcomes it because I guess he feels that he'll be released from his tortured bondage of being in his body and in his own head.
Well, it's just the kind of same thing with, you know, being suicidal. If there are voices in your head, they're telling you to do weird things, people are after you, and whether it's a fear thing or people are out to kill you, If you're gonna get a death sentence, you know, my sister one time went to the house. She ended up at the police station, and she wanted to be charged with a crime, so they give her the death penalty. This happened 1999, I think.
Why did she want the death sentence to be released from her torture?
Did she
think she was guilty of something?
No, she wasn't. She's more of a threat to herself than anybody. But she has these. Like I said, she has these thoughts, you know, she's being stalked, she has these, I mean, it's really weird because they concoct these, you know, these people, these voices, this almost alternate dimension in their minds. It's just really, you know, fascinating how many, you know, they know all the details, you know, she swears she knows somebody that lives down the street, but, you know, it's people I've never met or any of my family have ever met, and, you know, she's two characters that we've never heard of that, you know, don't exist. You know, they even have names, Dustin and Cynthia. So, you know, when she starts talking about Dustin and Cynthia, something's not right. She needs to get back on her meds or, you know, so.
Well, that's not easy. It's not easy for the family.
Yeah, you know, and try to be rational. It's hard to be rational with an irrational person. So it's always, like I said, it's a struggle. And, you know, trying to find the right meds that'll work. And, you know, it's give and take, you know, trying to.
And I guess we always think that there's some right combination, but sometimes there isn't a right combination. Yeah. Joe Anderson, thank you, producer of the Enid Goldstein
Thank
Show.
You. Man.
That's not easy to be a family member in a situation like that. But probably good training to be on this show, I think. Yeah. Or work with me. he's being diplomatic. I'm Enid Goldstein. You're listening to the Tuesday edition of Enid Live on AM 1150 KNRC.
Get your side, get their side. Hear both sides talk on AM 1150 KNRC.
This is Rocky Moselle of the International Star Registry. For over 20 years, One Gift has become the most unforgettable gift ever received, naming a star after someone. For $48 and a call to 800-282-3333, the Star Registry will send a full-color parchment certificate, sky charts to locate the star, and a fascinating booklet on astronomy. The star name will be recorded in book form in the U.S. Copyright Office. Call the Star Registry now at 800-282-3333 or visit starregistry.com for the gift that is remembered forever.
The KNRC Community Commitments.
The Ronald McDonald House offers comfort, hope, and love by providing a home away from home to out-of-town families receiving medical treatment for their children. They could use your help with donations of non-perishable food items and assistance with meal preparation. Both groups and individuals are needed for volunteer programs. If you can help, please call the Ronald McDonald House at 303-832-2667 or go online to ronaldhouse.org. RAD, Recording Artists, Actors, and Athletes Against Drunk Driving, says, don't take your lifestyle on the road. Designate before you celebrate. Learn more at RADD.org.
The KNRC Community Commitment.
The Denver Center Theater Company presents its silver anniversary season and Stephen Vincent Benet's masterful story of the American Civil War, John Brown's Body. January 29th through February 28th. Single tickets are on sale. Now for this richly textured account of the American Civil War, utilizing music from the period and a cast of actors who played roles on both sides of the conflict. Tickets for John Brown's Body are on sale now by calling 303-893-4100 or denvercenter.org.
Show on AM 1150 KNRC. Here again, Enid Goldstein.
It is 2:57 on the Tuesday edition of Enid Live, and we just have a couple more minutes with each other. You have missed Elizabeth Buchan, but you can meet her tonight at Tatter Cover Cherry Creek at 7:30, and I think you'll have a rollicking good time if you do. Then her new book is called It's a Novel, The Good Wife Strikes Back, and it was really fun to talk to her about the royal family and what's going on in England, because there are all those allegations. We began the show with all those allegations that are now surfacing that Princess Di wrote before she died, that she thought it was Prince Charles who was trying to murder her. We've also been talking about Arkansas preparing to execute the mentally ill inmate who is only lucid when he's on medication, and the law forbids executing somebody who's insane, whatever that may mean, whatever sane may mean. And yet, this inmate is looking forward to, he welcomes the scheduled execution, and I believe it's scheduled for tonight. He welcomes this execution because he's tired of living with these voices in his head. He is schizophrenic, and he's tortured. I guess we believe that medication can solve everything, but I certainly have heard stories, and you heard our producer, Joe Anderson, talking about his sister who has been diagnosed with schizophrenia. I have a friend whose brother is a schizophrenic, and they had him stabilized for a lot of years on one kind of, and then he stopped taking his, he just wouldn't take his medications anymore. And now they cannot find the right combination, and he's just completely tortured. There are all these scenarios that play out over in his head, and you just, your heart goes out because there's no easy answer. It's one thing to be tortured by the universe, and it's another thing when you're torturing yourself. And you have no control over these voices that come through to you, it really sounds like a very tough existence. And so he's not focused enough to be able to read, and he's not focused enough to be able to drive and do things. He smokes a lot of cigarettes, and the mom is getting much older, and they have helped each other, and now the question is how this is all going to play out as the mom gets perhaps too old to take care of the schizophrenic son. We'll see what happens. There'll be more going on this week. Show live from the Press Club on Friday in honor of the stock show. We'll be talking about that as we go along. Thank you, Joe Anderson, for your fine work and for sharing your story about your sister. Thank you, Sean McKenzie, for keeping us on the air and keeping us on time. I'm Enid Goldstein. Thanks to all of you who called and listened. Let's do it tomorrow. Let's have lunch together, noon to 3 on KNRC. Try to leave the world a better place than you found it. Do something generous. I mean it. I'll see you tomorrow right here at noon. Doug Kellett up next.
KNRC 1150.
Hear both sides talk. AM 1150, KNRC, Englewood, Denver. Doug Kellett is straight ahead. It's 3 o'clock.
Good afternoon. Partly cloudy, 30 degrees. I'm Tim McLaughlin. This report brought to you by RE/MAX. A man is hospitalized after he caught on fire at a home in Bennett. Sergeant Jerry Peters of the North Metro Drug Task Force said a call regarding a fire at 231 Cherry Street came in this morning about 9:30.
When our investigators went inside, there was a lot of fire damage to the basement area of the residence. And what they found was but the items that were of concern to the firemen, they had also gone in with us. It turned out to be some kind of steam cleaner along with a bunch of degreaser.
The occupant of the house was taken to University Hospital in Denver. His condition isn't known at this time. Investigators found equipment used to consume methamphetamines. They also heard from witnesses of a second occupant running from the burning home. That's a guy authorities want to talk to. Peters doesn't know exactly how the fire started, but his best guess is that the hospitalized man was cleaning the basement carpet, decided to light a match, and that ignited flames. Police in Englewood still trying to sort things out as they investigate a suspicious death. Englewood Police Spokesman Jim Ulrich describes what officers found this morning when they entered an apartment at 3525 South Bannock.
They subsequently went into the apartment and they found this lady, and she had sustained fatal injuries. And they're doing the investigation now to determine the exact cause of death.